AGP, are we ready? Okay. It is 1 o'clock on Thursday, December 12th. I hereby call the regular meeting of the Camry Community Services District to order. Would you please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? All five directors are present, and we have a quorum. We have a very good crowd here today. I think there's a special presentation, not of among board members, but among one of our longtime employees. I want to, first of all, before we go further, have our counsel, Tim Carmel, report from the closed session that was conducted this morning.
Well, I reported out this morning at the meeting, but I'm reporting out on the November 21st meeting.
Okay.
At the November 21st regular meeting, the board had a closed session for a conference with its labor negotiators pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. The district's designated representatives were General Manager Matthew McElhaney and Attorney Che Johnson. The employee groups were International Association of Firefighters, Local 4635, and the Service Employees International Union, Local 620. No action was taken by the board.
Thank you. And just to clarify, there was a closed session this morning after which Mr. Carmel reported, and I believe that reporting would be on the recording of the special meeting, the open portion of it, wouldn't it?
That's correct, and you'll find
you refer to that. Yeah, it'll be on the website. Thank you.
You'll find it's very similar to one I just made.
Word for word, almost. Yeah. Okay. There's no president's report this time around. In agenda reviews is the time in which we ask directors if they have any agenda items they want either moved or deleted from this agenda, not added. Does anyone have any requests to make an agenda review of that kind? Seeing none, we move on to item 1G, which is discussion and consideration of election of officers, which is election of the president and vice president of the board. As president, I guess I will keep it simple. I think we start by just taking nominations and voting on those, and then we move on with the new officers. Director Dean.
I would like to nominate Vice President Deborah Scott as president for the board.
I have a second.
I will second the motion.
Any discussion? Okay. So moving to second that Vice President Deborah Scott be appointed president of the board for the coming year. Can I have a roll call, please?
Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Thomas?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Vice President Scott?
Abstain.
President Gray?
Aye. The board made a very good choice. So we have one other position to fill. It's vice president. Again, I'll just go through the ask for nominations and motions and an informal motion. Director Dean again.
I nominate Director Michael Thomas as vice president.
And I'll go ahead and second that.
Okay, it's moved and seconded that Michael Thomas be named vice president for the coming year. Could I have a roll call, please?
Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Thomas?
Aye.
Vice President Scott?
Aye.
President Gray?
Aye. And at this point, I think this is when we hand over the duties, and not just the duties, but a gavel. Each new president gets, I got one too, each new president gets a gavel and a base with an inscription on it. And I think Director Dean can mention, do you want to say anything about this? Because, yeah.
Well, when I was president, I had the gavel of transparency, and I thought that Deborah should have the same type of crystal gavel.
Yes, it's very elegant. So, President Scott, I hereby award you the gavel that you'll be using for the coming year as president of this board. Use it well. And it says on it. Just so you know, the dedication says community service with dedication, integrity, fiscal responsibility, respect. That covers it. Thank you.
Thank you.
What I'll do is move. I guess make it simple. We might have a situation where I go there, you move up. I don't know.
Just be sure to bring your cookies.
Yes.
Yeah. Congratulations, President Scott and Vice President Thomas.
Thank you. Yes. There you go.
The same.
Yeah, they do.
We have cookies, courtesy of Director Dean, at our places here. So we had to make sure we don't lose those. Okay, so over to you.
So I'd like, even though this is not on the agenda, what I'd like to do is to say thank you to the board, thank you to the staff, and thank you to all of those who are in the audience. Thank you, General Manager McElhaney, for this really auspicious honor. I do this with heartfelt thanks. Thank you very much. Yes.
And I would like to acknowledge the excellent leadership that Tom Gray, Director Gray, has shown presiding over this board. It's been very efficient and it's shown excellent judgment. And so just want to thank you and acknowledge that.
Thank you. Thank you, man. This has been a wonderful board to work with. I'm still working with them, of course. But this is a very good board in a lot of ways. We work collegially, and it makes the job of the president much easier because of this board. Thank you again.
Thank you.
I just want to concur in the sense that I've lived in this town for 38 years and have been on the board now for 8 years. And without a doubt, in my humble estimation, this is the best board that this community has ever had. And Tom's leadership, I would say this, that I was personally very impressed with the balance with which Tom approached his position, when I think some of us might have been a little, I know people on the committee said, well, you know, it's Tom and he's got an agenda. Well, I would say this, I don't think that ever showed at all. He was, he did a great job. I'll just say that. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Thank you, Harry.
And has been very, very supportive of me, and so thank you. Okay. But they didn't teach me how to do the timer, so if I make a mistake, I will let you know. Yeah, it's okay. Okay, so let's go on to agenda item 2, and I would like you.
Just a minute.
Oh.
President Scott.
Okay. You're not ready to go to acknowledgments yet?
Well, I actually wanted to acknowledge President Gray. You guys really took some steam out of my show. But staff and I wanted to take a minute to acknowledge President Gray. It's been an honor working with you. Staff recognize the remarkable contributions that you've contributed as the outgoing president. We've had the pleasure of witnessing your commitment to the district, your ability to navigate challenges and maintain a clear vision for us. On a personal side, when I was appointed GM, outgoing President Gray was the one to vote against my appointment. So you can imagine heading into my second year of working with the president and thinking to myself, oh boy, here we go, you know. But I can tell you from this last year that President Gray outgoing President Gray, former President Gray, Director Gray. We built a strong foundation of trust with one another, and I found mutual respect, shared purpose, and an overall passion towards leading this community in the correct direction. And so while it was a little nerve-wracking in the beginning, I think, and I'll just say it, I think Tom and I have created a special relationship working together. I think he's done a phenomenal job as president. He's straight to the point, matter of fact, and doesn't leave anything idle, let's say. So with that, I just want to thank you for your service to the district, Director Gray, and present you with this plaque.
I just want to say I was really moved by that, by Mr. McElhenney's narrative of our year working together, and I didn't know he was that frightened. I don't think of myself as a scary guy, but it is a point to be made there, though, that he has been a superb general manager, I think, And I came in with some skepticism about his preparation and his ability to handle the job. And, you know, he made a believer of me. And I hope we can continue working together. I'll be down there in the ranks someplace, you know. But it's been, Mr. McElhenney and the staff do make this place work. The board is an advisor, ultimately, in terms of policy. Obviously, set policy, but we don't manage the district. We don't run the thing. We don't make the water and sewer systems work. We don't do all that stuff. And I think thanks in large part to his decisions. We have a superb staff. We serve the public, I think, as well as we ever have. And, credit goes to the people who actually do the work. So thank you. Thank you. And thank you for all your kind words about me.
Okay, so let's go on then to agenda item 2. This is acknowledgments, and Mr. McElhenney, are you going to do this, or is it Chief Berkey?
Thank you, President Scott. Chief Berkey will be taking it from me.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam President, members of the board, members of the staff, and members of the community. Thank you for joining us today and giving me this opportunity to honor a dedicated and esteemed member of our fire service community. Today we come together to celebrate the retirement of Captain Emily Torlano, who has devoted over 24 years of service to the protection of our community, the safety of our brothers and sisters in the department, and the highest ideals of the firefighting profession. Captain Torlano began her fire service career in the United States Forest Service in 1996. She was hired at Cambria Fire Department immediately after graduating from the Allen Hancock College Fire Academy in 2000. She obtained her paramedic license in 2004 and continued to work her way up the ranks of firefighter, engineer, and finally was promoted to captain in 2015. During her career, she developed a passion for teaching, training, and writing. She was proactive in making training a high priority and spent countless hours researching and writing grants for the department. She completed an associate's degree in fire science and bachelor's degree in fire science administration and is currently working on her master's in organizational leadership. She also obtained numerous fire service certifications. Captain Torlano not only led with skill and courage, but also with compassion. Over the years, she has shown what it truly means to serve through countless hours, sacrifices, and moments of valor. As a firefighter, captain, and mentor, she set an example for all of us to follow. As we gather today, we remember the calls, the teamwork, and the unwavering commitment to excellence. I would like to now read the proclamation from the CCSD Board of Directors, which I will present to Captain Torlano at the end of this ceremony. A proclamation of the Board of Directors of the Cambria Community Services District, conveying the district's gratitude and appreciation to Fire Captain Emily Torlano upon her retirement from the district. Whereas, Emily Torlano has served the district for 24 years in a professional and loyal manner, and whereas Emily began employment in 2000 as a reserve firefighter, was promoted to fire engineer in 2005, and in 2015, she was promoted to her current rank of fire captain. And whereas Emily has represented the Cambria Fire Department near and far by responding to thousands of emergency incidents, and has also served as a member of the San Luis Obispo County Critical Incident Stress Management Team, as well as the San Luis Obispo County Training Office Association. And whereas Emily has approached her job in a professional, skillful, and dedicated manner, and with strong commitment to serving this community. And whereas the Board of Directors wishes to recognize Fire Captain Emily Torlano for the contributions she has made over her years of service to the district. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Board of Directors of the Cambria Community Services District as follows, that the Board of Directors hereby recognizes the commitment, dedication, and loyalty of Fire Captain Emily Torlano and conveys its earnest appreciation and thanks for the many contributions she has made during her 24 years as an employee of the district. I would now like to invite Captain Torlano to come forward as we honor her retirement with the ringing of the bell. Signifying the end of her time as an active member of this department. The bell has long been a symbol in the fire service, with one ring at the beginning of service and three rings at the end of service. It is a tribute to those who answer the call to serve, to the challenges faced, and the sacrifices made. As we perform this final act in Captain Torlano's career, the ringing of the bell marks the end of one chapter and the beginning of another. It symbolizes the conclusion of a distinguished career and the legacy that will live on within this department and community. As Captain Torlano rings the bell, we acknowledge the countless lives to touch, the victories won, and the dedication that has defined her time with us. We honor her legacy of leadership, courage, and sacrifice. We would please ring the bell three times. Captain Torlano, on behalf of the entire fire department and our community, I would like to present you the proclamation and your last helmet as we thank you for years of service, your leadership, and your unwavering commitment. You've set an example for all of us, and your impact will never be forgotten. On behalf of the Cambria Fire Department and the entire Community Services District, we wish you nothing but happiness and success in this new chapter of your life. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Pretty emotional time for me, and I just want to thank everybody, the district, the Board of Directors, General Manager McElhaney, Chief Putney in the back. You know, he hired me back in 2005, my first permanent position. And when I was getting ready to retire about 6 months ago, Chief Berkey asked me, you know, is there anything he could do to make sure that I would be okay, you know, in this transformational time? And, you know, there really wasn't anything because he's already doing it. He is doing a phenomenal job. be in support with the board and General Manager McElhaney. I think this is one of the best times of my whole career. I see such positivity and hope for my crew and my crew members. And, you know, I'm really happy to leave at such a such a positive time in my career and go and have adventures with my kids who are in the back. They've made quite sacrifices for me, you know, working long hours. It's really been a privilege and honor to serve this community. It's a very special place to work, and I have such gratitude for my time here. So thank you very much.
Chief Berkey and Captain Torlano, we do have a public comment on the video, so you might want to listen to this.
Yes, Michael Calderwood.
Hi, good afternoon. Can you hear me okay? Hello? I don't know if you can hear me.
Yeah. We can't hear you yet.
Yet, okay.
Yes, we cannot hear you yet.
Am I there?
There. You have to yell.
I'm there. Hello?
Can you hear him?
Very, very slightly.
Very faintly.
Okay, yeah. Hi, sorry. Wish I could have been there in person to give Emily the send-off she deserves, but I wrote a little something. I'm going to ask my wife, Jan, who has a much more powerful voice, to read it for me, if that's all right.
Yes.
This is from Michael, and by proxy, me as well. Leadership shows itself in moments of stress and times of quiet reflection. It is not always a top-down view. The best think of us instead of me. With Captain Emily Torlano, it is evident in the physical bravery required of first responders and her passionate advocacy for fellow service members. Most importantly, it is demonstrated in her tireless and at times personally and professionally risky championing for the community. Leaders have flaws. Sometimes they lead with their chin, occasionally with the emotion born of devotion to service. Sometimes mistakes happen. Leaders take those mistakes and learn, then teach each other how to handle the struggle. Leadership also demands compassion and a focus on those in peril, pain, and trauma, giving aid and comfort while absorbing stress so the other will feel protected. My friend Emily has shown all these things to our community. The most remarkable thing I have seen from Emily is her compassion. I saw firsthand how her kindness and compassion married her professionalism as she and a fellow first responder from our healthcare ambulance crew turned a terrified and frantic human into a calm and compliant patient they could take to a place where help was available. On a more personal note, Emily helped me deal with a situation that required everything in her kit. She de-escalated, established a rapport, offered medical and emotional choices, and later followed up with information and resources that helped us move forward. Courage, focus, commitment to service. These are traits I admire in a leader. They are also traits I cherish in a friend. Thank you, Emily, for all of it. I look forward to our continued friendship. Say hi to your mom.
Thank you, Mr. Calderwood.
So I would like to thank Emily for her dedication to all of the years of service she has given to our community. And I agree with that word that Michael's wife expressed, compassion. When I've been in my neighborhood taking care, not as a caregiver, but as a caregiver without having that definition associated with it. Two very elderly women, many times I was there when they fell downstairs or whatever and had to call 911, and Emily sometimes was one of the folks in the fire department that showed up, and she was just so wonderful. So I wanted to thank her personally. And I also would like to take this moment to say congratulations, President Scott and Vice President Thomas. Thank you.
Thank you.
President Scott?
Yes.
Elizabeth Bettenhausen would like to speak as well.
Okay, go ahead. Thank you, Dr. Bettenhausen. We can't hear you yet. Okay. All right. If she wants to comment later on, then we'll go ahead and let her do that. Thank you so much, Captain, and have a wonderful retirement. Thank you so much. So let's go on then to board member communications. No board member communications? Oh, yes, one. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I won't say much because I know likely Mr. Green and Aguirre will be talking about this, but it is so exciting to see ground broken at the East Ranch with site preparation and the loop trail halfway done through the innovation of the crew. So that's I'll leave it there because I know there's more coming.
Thank you, Vice President Thomas. Any other board communication? No? All right. And let's go on to public safety reports. I don't know who's here to give the Sheriff's Department report. Usually it's Commander McDonald, but he's not here. So, okay. All right. Well, thank you. Let's go to agenda item 4. Oh. Let's go then to agenda item 4B. This is the CCSD Fire Chief's report. Chief Berkey.
President Scott,
yes.
May we move on to my report, and then when Chief is done saying goodbye to Captain Torlano, he could pop in and do his?
What I'd like to do before you do that is to go to public comment.
Okay. Okay.
So let's go ahead and take public comment. This is a comment from the public on issues that are related to the jurisdiction of the CCSD, but not on the agenda. So I do have one notice to have Ms. Dixon speak public comment at this time.
Thank you, President Scott. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm going to make some very quick comments regarding the... Well, it's going to be difficult. There's a lot of noise in the back here.
Yeah, we'll close the door.
Can we get the door closed
or
something?
Yeah, we'll close the door.
So regarding the Proposition 218 rate increase for trash services, as I'm sure Mr. Carmel is aware, and he may have shared with the board, that during the last rate increase in 2018, the California Supreme Court made a decision on Zolli versus the city of Oakland, a big, big city that owns its streets. And out of that that decision, there are already and probably will be forthcoming in the future some issues regarding local solid waste franchise fees. Local governments often award franchises for solid waste collection and management. These franchises and associated franchise fees have traditionally not been treated as taxes or regulatory fees by local governments. In Zolli, the court examined whether Oakland's solid waste franchise agreement constitutes a tax under Proposition 26. Oakland granted two solid waste franchises in 2012. This case went before an appellate court before the Supreme Court, so it was 2020. And under which, at that time, the franchisees agreed to pay the city approximately $25 million annually. Some solid waste franchise fees are based on the local government's actual administrative costs of granting the franchise, but others are not. I'm going to just read three bullet points from At the End of the Day. Zolli requires local governments to take a fresh look at their solid waste franchise fees. Here are three. One, local governments cannot claim franchise fees are outside the purview of Prop 26 because they are the product of voluntary contractual negotiations or are not directly imposed on residents. Two, local governments cannot claim that a franchise is local government property that can be sold, rented, or leased. And three, local governments likely can claim that their solid waste franchise fee is exempt from Prop 26 as a benefit conferred or privilege granted to the payor. However, they will have to show that the fee does not exceed the reasonable cost to the local government of conferring that benefit. And I would say this, that under Article Section 13D, Article 13D, Section 6(2)(b)(2) of Prop 218, quote, revenues derived from the fee or charge shall not be used for any purpose other than that for which the fee or charge was imposed. We do not have streets in this town that we own. The county owns them. This district should not be charging a franchise fee for a service that they are not providing. The service is being provided by Mission Country. Now, we'll see. And the other item I was going to say is, why is the public hearing on the 16th of January after the January 1st imposed fee? Why? And we have 5 years of fees. So in September of 22, that was not the case. The hearing was September 15th, and the increase went into effect October 1st.
Thank you, Ms.
I have that question for Mr. Carmel to answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Carmel, is that something that you can do right now?
Thank you, Madam President. It's not on the agenda, and frankly, I'm not in control of the scheduling itself, so no, I wouldn't be able to answer that question.
Thank you very much. Is there any other public comment?
No.
Oh, yes, there is one.
Hello. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Christina Galloway, Cambria. So I just wanted to check in on a previous question of mine that's gone unanswered regarding the improper transfer of water meters from mixed commercial and residential structures to undeveloped residential lots. Which is a violation of our own Title VIII Municipal Code. More specifically, the ongoing situation with the Iyengar property and application for a new 2,876-square-foot home to be built on Park Hill. Although it's my understanding that this water meter transfer was facilitated between a local realtor and the CSD, not the current property owner, my concerns still remain the same. So, wanted to ask, does the CCSD have any plans to address or correct this improperly issued water meter transfer? And is it the intention of the CCSD to issue a water will serve to this property once the other associated civil matters are resolved?
Thank you.
Thank you.
And as was said earlier, this is not on the agenda, so we won't be able to go to that, to the point to answer the question, but I'm sure that if you contact Mr. McElhaney, he'll be able to answer your questions. Thank you so much for the comment. Yes, Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Scott. I just want to ask Ms. Galloway, I know she mentioned the address, I believe, and I didn't catch it, so if she could come back up to the microphone. And didn't you mention the address itself? Square footage, okay. Thank you very much.
No other comments. Okay. So I think what we can do is Chief Berkey's back now. Should I go ahead and go to his report? All right. Chief Berkey, catching you on the sly, let's go ahead and have your report. This is agenda item 4B.
I apologize.
Not a problem.
So this is the report for, good afternoon, everybody, again. So this is the report for the November of 2024. During November, we had a total of 91 incidents, two fires, 47 medical emergencies, two hazardous conditions, 33 public service assists, and seven false alarms. Down below there, we have the comparison information. We served 53 of our residents and 27 of our non-residents. In November of 2023, the total was 93, so pretty much on par. The year-to-date in 2024 is 920. The year-to-date last year was 971, so a little bit behind, but pretty much the same. The next page there, I documented a little bit of our training. So we had 102.5 hours total for the department in the month of November. Some of those topics included the infectious control, elevator rescue, high angle rescue, and fire behavior. Public education, we had a bunch of station tours, which we do pretty frequently. We did a hands-only CPR demo with the CCHD, which is always a good thing to be able to collaborate with that agency. And then also we have the, as you guys all are, I'm sure, aware, we have the Cambria Christmas Market going full swing right now. And just a little bit of history on that. So every year, they have a permit that lasts, I believe their permit right now is for 15 years, but that requires me, it doesn't mean I just kind of turn my eyes away and don't look at it for 15 years. It's something that I do every single time that the season comes around. I'm in contact with them, and I do a walkthrough, multiple walkthroughs to not only make sure that they're being fire compliant and everything's safety-wise as far as exits, but if they have any changes or any upgrades, then I'm looking at that too to make sure that that's very everything's fire safe with that as well. So we do that every year, and then at the end of it, when it's all over, I go through and do a walkthrough at the end of it to make sure that everything's been locked up adequately. So again, I just wanted to kind of inform the public a little bit of that. Like I said, we're always watching, we're always there to make sure that everything's safe. So down below, we had a total of 12 public services events, four business inspections, four defensible space residential inspections, and four smoke detector changes. That concludes my report. As always, you can always find more information on our website at cambriacsd.org under Fire Department and Monthly Stats. I'm open to any questions.
Thank you, Chief Berkey. Does any of the... Oh, go ahead.
Thank you, President Scott.
Yes.
Yes, Chief Berkey, thank you for the report. I wanted to just ask a little follow-up question on defensible space residential inspections. Because I know I'm familiar with a couple of cases where there was a problem of tree debris or just weeds and so forth. Could you tell the public here through this, your meeting, the meeting here, how they can, if they see something like that, what they do? Because the fire department does respond, and you respond with a letter to the property owners, I understand it. They got 30 days to remedy it, but then very much like, just like our weed abatement, fire department can go ahead and have the work done, then it gets billed to the property owner, same kind of system. So I think the public might need to know sometimes where to go and who to call to get that process going.
Yeah, so there's multiple routes you can take to notify the fire department. A lot of it can be done online through the online notification system. You can call my cell phone. That's probably the most common. And then also send me an email as well. So those are all, and there might be some more. I can't remember if there's anything on our website other than that notification system. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was not listening. What was the question?
How citizens or residents will report what they think is a defensible space problem, like weeds or debris or around a house.
Yeah, so on the fire department page under Contact Fire Department, there is an option to report a hazard.
Perfect. That's what I was going for. Thank you, Haley. So again, once that's done, or they can come by the fire department as well. And at the very last, if it's a true emergency or something that they're, you know, a tree that they feel is an immediate hazard, always call 911, and then we'll get the fire department out there immediately to evaluate it. Obviously, we don't want to use 911 for, you know, just the inspection type area, but if they feel like necessary, the dispatchers are well trained to be able to diffuse that. So,
thank you.
Thank you, Chief Berkey. Vice President Thomas.
Thank you, President Scott. Just a quick question: high angle rescue, is that off the cliff?
Yeah, so that is everything that would be considered high angle. So that's off of buildings as well. So that you can do it's. How do I summarize that? But yeah, most of the time it is going to be off of the cliff area. So that's when you see us out there with all the ropes and gears and rock climbing type equipment. That's what we're doing. It's high angle. Yeah. And there's definitions of high versus low, but that's in a nutshell, that's what it is. Yep.
Thank you, Chief Berkey. I have a question too. So is it that if we call you, you can change our smoke detector?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we call and we say it's beeping and it won't stop, or?
Okay. 100%.
All right.
And that's, again, that's going to be, I like your smile. So that's going to be, again, if it's not an emergency and we are on emergency, there might be a delay for that. Sometimes we have people that, they know that their smoke detector batteries are going to be expiring, and so they'll schedule it with us. And we're more than happy to go out and do that for sure. Any of those fire prevention aspects we're absolutely willing to do.
Even the real high ones.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. That's our favorite one. So.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Do we have any public comment on this agenda item?
No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. McElhaney was so excited to do his report, so I think it's time for your report. This is under agenda item 6A.
Thank you, President Scott.
Yes.
It'll be a short one. Okay. A lot of our district updates will be revealed in the utilities report. So we'll be working out of the Vets Hall on December 18th, both the fire chief and I, where if the public would like to come down and engage in some of these conversations that can't be spoken about in terms of discussion because it's not on the agenda, that's really what that's for. A lot of times our finance manager and utilities manager will be there as well. So come on down. We have our employee and director barbecue on Monday. We're going to get everybody together and celebrate the end of the year. We know that the hearing for the rate adjustment is for our solid waste management rates January 16th. And there's some details in the agenda packet on how the public can protest these rate increases. And there's a lot of details within that. With that, I want to highlight that we do have a low-income wastewater utility rate reduction program that relates to discounted rates for trash disposal. So some of our actual franchise fees are dedicated to assist those that are of lower income and that may be concerned about some of these rate increases. So that will continue. And with that, I'll turn it over to the board for any clarifying questions.
Okay. Anything from board members? Yes, Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Scott. I feel a little awkward in bringing this up, but there's been some negative comments on social media with regard to the trash rate increase, including a comment that the district has no problem gouging the residents of this community. And considering the integrity that I know that exists with our general manager, with members of the board, people that work at the district, I'm somewhat offended by this negativity that is out there. As pointed out by General Manager McElhaney, we could have raised the rate 10%. We just did a 6%. And we just offer, for people with a lesser income, to lower their trash rate, and we're willing to do that. I don't think anybody on this board ever takes lightly when we're having to impose some kind of increased cost in whatever fashion or form to the ratepayers of this community. We do it with a tremendous amount of forethought and concern. And I just want to mention that in no way, shape, or form do we not take into consideration the ratepayers of this community and the residents. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. No, I can't see your light, so your expired gavel is in the way.
President Scott, can I follow up?
Yes, you may.
Director Farmer, I also want to touch base on that we've started creating some informational web pages under the Prop 218 notice that talks about the benefits of contracting with Mission Disposal. So when there's a lot of these talks of the rate hikes, what would it take for perhaps the CCSD to undertake its own waste management service? So there's a detailed link on some of the benefits of why we stick with Mission Country Disposal. And while I understand rate increases are uncomfortable, we are a significant distance away from the landfill. Fuel, labor, everything has gone up. So even the digester, which Director Gray and Vice President Scott spoke about today. So there's a lot of things that go into these rate increases, but you are absolutely right. Staff and the district are not trying to gouge our ratepayers.
Can I tag on?
Oh, yes. I didn't see your light. Thank you.
The last time we had a rate increase for Mission Country Disposal, we were very concerned about its effect on the residents, especially low-income residents. And we had an ad hoc committee who worked diligently with Mission Country Disposal to see what we could do to help the people who are having difficulty paying their bills. We did turn down the 10% franchise fee, and we kept it at 6%. And we worked out that the people who qualified for our wastewater discount could get that same 40% discount on the 32-gallon can. And that 40% discount is reimbursed to Mission Country Disposal out of that 6% franchise fee. So we do care about the public, and we did what we could to try to help. And I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you, Director Dean. Any other? Yes.
Thank you, President Scott. Yeah, just to follow up on Mr. McElhaney's mention of the digester, it's mentioned in a fairly long and pretty in-depth report that was presented at the November 14th board meeting, I believe, by both a consultant who did the rate study itself, the rate study framework itself, and also a representative of Mission Country. That everybody who wonders why the rates are going up should read that, the agenda items, I think it's from the 14th, that are related to this, because they go into detail about the cost structure and why the costs have gone up. Digester is a kind of state-of-the-art system for capturing methane from organic waste, and it's noted in the report that this county, or maybe Mission Country specifically, is like the first adopter of this new technology, which will be mandated universally, but in the state. But they're the first ones, and they adopted it in the past 3 or years. Two or three years. Costs of operating it have been quite a bit higher than expected, which kind of goes with using something very new and complicated. And that's one reason. I mean, these are mandates that we get from the state, or Mission Country gets from anybody who's doing trash gets those mandates from the state. They have to be met at some point. They are costly sometimes, and they do make rates go up. But the key point I want to make is that a lot of what's going into this rate increase, in fact, everything is going into it, is explained in a lot of detail. It's sort of a long and maybe not a very interesting thing to read, but it answers a lot of questions. So I think I urge everyone to go back, go online, and look at that agenda item, look at the packet that's online, and read it, and come back. And if they have any further questions, we'd love to answer them.
Thank you. Yes, Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Scott.
Sure.
I just want to add one more thing, because I know there are people out there in the county that actually watch our board meetings, even though they don't live here. And they might be wondering, well, this is taking up a little bit of time here, this discussion. Well, how much did the rate actually go up? And for approximately 85% of the ratepayers in this community, it went up $5.23 a month. So I just thought I'd throw that figure in to kind of put some perspective on the increased rate and how it's relatively reasonable in the scheme of things for the majority of people in this community. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Gray, do you have more information?
I was just trying to find, make sure I got the right date for that report. That's all. Let's see. I'll get back to you later if I do. Don't make myself if necessary.
Okay, thank you. And I would like to say that even at the hearing itself, the 218 hearing, there will be information there. You can ask questions, make statements, whatever it is that you need to know from us or from maybe other people who are coming who will answer your questions, that will be available at that point too.
Just to clarify, November 14th is the agenda that I was correct, is item 4A.
Thank you. So do we have any public comment on this?
No.
All right. Let's go then to agenda item 6B. This is facilities and resource manager. Mr. Aguirre, are you? You are here. Good. You have a light on your pocket.
We were just informed that the bell is blocking a camera. So we're going to move that.
Good afternoon, President Scott. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And the board and staff. So on our facilities report on this one here, even though we had a little bit of rain that came in, what was it, a couple weeks back, and also today, last night, we've slowed down a little bit in our department, but we still got a bunch of different stuff that we've been doing and taking care of, especially as everything dries out. We try to stay out of the fields, the ranch, everything of that nature, try to keep it more or less intact without tearing it up. So we're still patrolling the CCSD lots and the trails and reassuring that everything's taken care of out there by double-checking on trees and stuff. I've been working with Berkey on a couple different trees that we've come across that the community was concerned about. We got those resolved. It should be resolved by the end of the month, such as removal and stuff of that nature for hazardous trees and stuff of that. So what the guys have been doing on the next one here. So we've been doing some tree branch and brush removal. The F&R crew has been out trimming some of the trees, the branches, chipping, small brush. They've been focusing on the Center Street parking lot, that one there, as you can tell in the photo off to the right, it was pretty congested. There was a little confusion on my end just in regards of who came down to the lot and the responsibility on our department. So we took care of it as soon as we got everything clarified. We ended up with a good solid trailer load of debris between the drainage and everything on that side. They ended up trimming up everything on the Main Street walking path on the East Ranch. We already had ivy and also branches start taking it over. It was kind of burying it, so we went ahead and exposed it once again. Towards the dog park. And then the Santa Rosa Trail, the drive down to, I believe it's B Station. That one there, he was kind of overrun with a bunch of the trees and branches. So we went ahead and went back and chipped all that up to clear it up for the back truck or vice versa to get access in there without any hesitation or anything in the way. They currently were working on from Burton all the way down to the split to the parking lot there on Rodeo Grounds Road. The gentleman, the crew have turned around and gone out and weed abated the side. We went ahead and dropped it all down pretty decent, but not all the way down to the ground because due to the fact of the erosion issue that we have. We've exposed the edge of the road, so I've already made a call into the county and in regards to having widened it out and cleaned it all out on that side so that way it makes that road a little more presentable as you come in, not as congested. Yeah. Let's see here. Yeah, so with the dog park on the rodeo grounds, this is what we've been doing. We did dump approximately about 24 tons of crushed sand back on the ground, quite a bit, filling in potholes in low areas and stuff of that nature. We ended up waiting after the point to where the rain subsided, let it dry, basically about 75% of it, and then we dropped it all on top so we can crush it back into the ground so it'll adhere to it. That was more or less a two-day process from there. And then today we did notice there's a couple spots that are still low. So we'll be addressing that so that we can level out that. And eventually we are going to be turning around and grading it, scraping it all out to even out a lot of the bumps that are in there. So the East Ranch Santa Rosa Trail, this is what we've been doing prior to the rain. My biggest concern was sitting there and looking at it to where the waste side, they also have manholes throughout this area, the public using it, and also with our crews going down this road on the East Ranch, it goes down towards Highway 1. We do have an abundance of wood chips that we've collected, some of the areas that we've been chipping, and let alone some of the companies that we've contracted with, and they decide to volunteer to drop off some. So we're covering basically from the parking lot all the way down to Highway 1. We're doing them in steps, just making sure that they're packed, everything's going out right. We're doing the loop around the island down to Highway 1 and then back to the dog park. So it's one of those projects that we're slowly working into because due to the fact of the wood chips, they do benefit the area, but also low points. I just don't want to turn around and dump them all out there and then have low points and then we don't have any more product to put back in there. But they're still working on that as we go, as the time, everything starts drying out. What's next? We're currently working on several items, and the tremendous progress that we have with our crews. I do have to say, I know next month I'm going to be introducing Anthony to the board, and just his presence and his experience has really made the team, I mean, we're flowing. There is an abundance of work that have been done in the matter of, you know, 3 or 4 days every week. And I'm very proud of them, for them stepping up and taking on what they've been focusing on and what we're doing in our department. Like I said, we're going to plan to introduce them next week or next month. We do have several other projects that I'm still working on. The little creek crossings and stuff of that nature, little bridges that I'm working with the FFRP trail department and stuff. That's basically everything I have on my report.
Thank you, Mr. Geary. Any of the directors? Yes, Director Gray. Oh, okay. Vice President Thomas.
Thank you, President Scott. Once again, what you've done on the trail along the East Ranch is fabulous. Great progress. The slides are great. I can't read them. It would be when Ms. Dodson sends out the written comments like Wednesday, it would be great if we could have those maybe just the day before the meeting. I know it's a scramble to get them because I mean, there's excellent information. I would love to have the opportunity to read through that, reflect, and then ask more intelligent questions.
Okay.
Yes, Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Scott. Yes, David, I just want to, Mr. Geary, I just want to thank you and your crew for what you've been doing lately. I know especially because you've been short-staffed, got new people coming on. So two thumbs up, and have a great holiday, okay?
Thank you. Do we have any public comment?
No.
Hey, I'd like to, at this point, would you let the audience know who is on online?
Yes, Crosby and Laura Swartz, David Pearson, Dennis Duchek, Elizabeth Benhausen, and Michael Calderwood.
Thank you very much. The other thing that I would like the audience to know, when we came in this morning, we had the public comments in writing. We had a copy of them in front of us, and there also are copies in the back. So if anybody is interested in looking at the public comments that come into us prior to the meeting, there are those comments back in writing.
Ready? Okay, let's go on to the finance manager's report. Ms. Fritz?
Thank you, President Scott. You have before you an agenda. Item number 6C is the finance manager's report for the month of December, which in the consent agenda, we're including the expenditure report, all of the usual metrics that I report on. And I would say at this time of year, we're closing out our calendar year end, which does come with it a lot of reporting requirements and different things that we have to take care of. So I would say that we've been working on that. And we will be also creating the second quarter budget report here shortly, and that will come before the board in February. And so with that, any questions? I'm available for any questions.
Does the board have any questions? No? I have a question. None of us got any pay this time?
No, you did not. Which I double and triple check. But any time sheets will be paid out in this next pay cycle, which, or actually it was paid out last pay cycle, so you'll see it in the December expenditure report.
Thank you very much. Do we have any public comment?
No.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's go on then to agenda item 6D. This is utilities report, Mr. Green.
Good afternoon. Thank you, President Scott.
You're welcome.
All right, utilities report for the month of November. I'll begin with wastewater, where early in the month we met with our leaving Regional Water Quality Board representative and met our new Rachel Hahn representative. And we had a very productive conversation regarding our new waste discharge requirement order, which will take place starting January 1st, it looks like. We made some small edits and worked with them to develop this permit, which also includes a ZLD operation as well. Wastewater operators also did a prep for for a wet weather event. So in our storm events, if we were to lose a lift station, they brought in the big flood pump and showed the new operators in training how to hook that up, how the pumping works. And then while we had that evacuated, we made some repairs to that lift station as well. Also during the month, collections crew did 1 mile of jetting throughout the community. In water department, with the grayer weather, we were having a few more problems at our off-site or we have solar operations in some places where we don't have PG&E. So we have some off-grid locations, some of the older batteries there that absorb glass mat. Batteries are starting to fail. So where we had 5 of these AGM batteries, we've replaced them now with 1 lithium battery. So less waste in the future. And you get a lot more operational time out of those lithium batteries. AGMs, you can take down to 0.5% or 50% of that battery total capacity, and then you have to charge it back up. Lithiums, you can take all the way down to 80. So they're much more operationally feasible for us during this kind of gray weather time. Santa Rosa diversion, we ended up our seasonal diversion there on October 31st, and we diverted 67% of our total annual there. And during that time in that operation from May through October, the Santa Rosa Creek ran the whole time and is still running. So it's nice to see that our municipal pumping isn't having any impact on that creek flow. And San Simeon diversion is also 39% of its annual allotment. So here we are almost all the way through the year. And we've used 40% of our diversion rates there. So I'm available for any questions, and also will provide some updates on some of our projects that are currently going on.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Board members, questions? Mr. Thomas, Vice President Thomas.
Thank you, President Scott. Yes. On the first page of the report, page 26, now, that last sentence, one of the challenges to meeting the new order requirements will be meeting the 500 milligrams per liter TDS requirements. That's going to be a challenge. Any thoughts yet on what we're going to do, or is that part of our strategic plan?
Yeah, that was part of the negotiations we sat at the table with Regional Water with. If our raw source water quality is 400 TDS, then we'd either like to subtract that from our analytic quantity, or at least, you know, a negotiable amount. If we're almost at our MCL, our maximum contaminant level, just in our raw supply, And of course, we have that tidal influence. So Monday or Sunday the 15th will be a king tide. So all those events affect us as well. They get into our RNI, so they're in our pipes. So that's coming to us influent into the wastewater treatment plant and just from our raw water as well. So that's something that we are currently working on negotiating, but yes.
Awesome. So
also, I'll make note, because that's a great segue into, we have 2 years of this permit to operationally kind of tweak or edit certain metrics that just aren't acceptable or tolerable for us.
Great. Good to hear. And then on page 41, I was just surprised to read that there's been one water use efficiency walkthrough completed year to date. Is that typical?
We had a transition from a utilities position who we send that out. That individual, not retired, but quit, moved on to another position. So we've been training. So, yeah, we're a little bit behind on that. Yeah, absolutely.
Gotcha. All right. Thank you.
And in wet years, we typically don't do them as well.
Right. Yeah. Is there more demand, or is it just not coming in, the requests?
Just not coming in for requests, so less demand, yeah.
Director Gray.
Thank you, President Scott. Mr. Green, I just had a question about the well level report, or I guess it's November 15th is a well reading, because I was struck by the gradient number, which was quite low compared to the month before. And I was wondering if there's anything to be concerned about there. I know there's a period between October and November with no rain. And this is before the rains, I guess, before Thanksgiving. But it was like 0.15, which is kind of getting into, you know, close to negative territory. And then and the month before it was 2.5, I think. So there's.
Right. I think what you're seeing with that is our almost sole diversion from May through October from the Santa Rosas, or a very good percentage of that. Now with the ceasing of that season, we start. And so you're starting to see the impact that we have by sole diversion from our San Simeon well locations.
But you could, if it got to a level where it was worrisome, go back, because you, as you mentioned, Santa Rosa hasn't been, you haven't really done the full diversion for Santa Rosa. We could go back to Santa Rosa if necessary to take the pressure off of San Simeon in that case, right?
Still, absolutely, yeah. I think what you're seeing there is kind of typical seasonal decline as well in conjunction with full operation from those sites.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the board? Oh, yes, Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Scott. I want to thank Director Gray for bringing up that item with regard to the well level. I was going to bring that up as well, so thank you, Tom. I just want to ask you, Mr. Green, you're on page 32, regarding San Simeon Well Level 3. So it says here, our automation contractor came to the site to integrate the variable frequency drive. So who is our automation contractor, and what is the variable frequency drive?
Our automation contractor is Tough Automation, who's been with us for almost 10 years here. Variable frequency drive is something that you can control the hertz and the speed on the motor at startup or any portion of operation, and it also ramps it down upon shutdown, so it's a lot easier on the pump. It's a lot less electrical pull, so the cost to operate that is obviously more efficient. And with that VFD, we have integrated it so that way we can control that well site remotely. So if our chlorine levels or disinfection levels rise or fall, we can adjust that pump remotely accordingly, so that way we don't have those dips or spikes in dosing.
Okay, and if I could also... I believe we rely quite a bit on San Simeon Well 3 for our water supply for the community, right?
2 and 3 especially.
2 and 3 especially, all right. And so how many wells are using this variable frequency drive? All of them on San Simeon?
All of our surface water treatment regulation wells, so SR 3 and 4, utilize them. Obviously, they're run seasonally. But this San Simeon Well 3 was kind of our prototype. We wanted to see how the replacement went and how this operated. So currently, Well 3 is our only VFD we have. So we are looking at, this was kind of our guinea pig or our test model here, our pilot. And it's working very well, so we are going to continue to budget and methodically approach replacing San Simeon 2 and then finally San Simeon 1. due to the creek flow, you know, the creek flow this year was only 90 days of not flowing. So if that creek's flowing, we can't operate San Simeon Well 1. So that pump has very low hours on it, and we'll look to kind of replacing that in the future. But right now we're looking at kind of duplicating what we did at San Simeon Well 3 at wellhead number 2.
All right, thank you. And I have one more question on page 37. At the bottom under the Stewart Street Tank Project, it says here the Coastal Development Permit application was successfully submitted to Slo County Planning on August 27th of this year. We anticipate a 2 to 3 month review period prior to permit issuance. So it's been a little past, you know, the 2 or 3 months, and we still don't have that permit issued. Do we have any idea when that might be taking place?
So the county planning has had in some of these documents and preliminary drawings for almost 5 months now. We just met on site with MKN, our consultants, today, and there's also the radio building, so we met with county radios to kind of talk logistics when we have to move some of their assets around for when we replace that. But Julie from MKN and I were talking today how she's going to start to nudge planning a little bit, because we've had plenty of time for their review and any of their requested conditions. We've met and submitted those documents. So I'm not sure, Director Farmer, why this piece has taken so long, because we provided them all their required documentation. And yeah, I can't really speak to them. We've provided everything they need, and they've had it for a long time. So,
well, I appreciate your answer. And I just want to say, it seems like, having been on this board for 8 years, I had no idea how long it took things to happen when we thought it wouldn't take nearly that long. So here's just another example. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? No? Hey, is there any public comment?
Yes, Elizabeth Bettenhausen, followed by Dennis Ducek.
Dr. Bettenhausen?
Thank you, Madam President. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, terrific. I have a question on page 4, and let me, page 40, let me try to get back to my page 40. I have a question about Santa Rosa Basin allocation and San Simeon Basin allocation. Why is Santa Rosa so much bigger than San Simeon? And if you explained it already, please explain it again so that I can understand it. Why is Santa Rosa so much bigger than San Simeon for the whole year? And if you've explained it already, please try again. Thank you.
When we talk bigger, are we talking acre foot of diversion? Because it's, we used, so dry season Santa Rosa diversion is 155.3 acre feet. I think we came within 9 of that, or 147.87. So we're almost meeting our annual diversion there, just in that seasonal withdrawal. But San Simeon has 799 acre feet per year, and we've only used 311 of that as far as end of month, November. So that, again, is only 39%. So San Simeon is a larger acre-foot diversion, and we divert more there annually. But during that period, when we have that season, we run Santa Rosa. So I guess maybe the diversion appears a little bit larger during that period. That'd be why, because we are trying to save the San Simeon aquifer and do aquifer management. And that's why we divert from so much volume from the Santa Rosas during that period. As you can see, as soon as we go back to the San Simeons, as we start diverting from there 100%, you can see the decline in aquifer levels.
Did that answer your question? She's not there. Anyone?
On mute. Oh, good. This year we had no diversion necessity, since we had considerable water in the aquifers. But I want to know why we use Santa Rosa for any reason other than minimal, as we're supposed to be using it. this year. That doesn't answer my question about about the use of San Simeon over Santa Rosa.
Mr. Green?
I'm not sure I can articulate the question, but again, so we've got these small buckets. We've got less than 100 feet when we hit bedrock in these aquifers. So when that creek flow ceases in San Simeon, that's all the volume in that bucket you have. So we try to save that as long as we can, knowing that at October 31st, we shut down operation at San Simeon or Santa Rosa's, unless there's emergency reason to divert from there.
Thank you very much.
Very good.
Okay, any other public comment?
Yes, Dennis Ducek.
Okay, Mr. Ducek.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
And thank you, President Scott. So I apologize for the lengthy introduction here to the question, but the question relates to Prop 4 that was passed. As you all know, Prop 4 was passed, $10 billion bond measure for safe drinking water, wildfire prevention, protecting communities and natural lands from climate risks, etc. And municipalities like the CCSD, including the CCSD, can have access to that funding coming up very quickly. Municipalities will need to submit detailed proposals outlining their projects and how they align with the goals of Prop 4 to get funding, some of which could be significant grant money. And projects need to be shown to benefit the communities and environment and protect from environmental changes and disasters. And there'll be certain eligibility criteria and that municipalities will need to meet, many of which we don't yet know. Submission deadlines are not, as far as I can tell, have not yet been published, but it looks like the Natural Resources Agency will be publishing those within a month or so. And so my question is, what are we doing to position ourselves to have access to some of those funds for the many significant projects that CCSD has that qualify for this funding?
Mr. Green, do you have an answer?
Yeah, so we have our grant writer, Elijah, and we've looked into some of these, and I don't have any comments to expand on that other than that we've looked at some of these. Some of these we don't qualify for. Some of these are disadvantaged community-only loans or funding. So I'll do some research, and I'll have a response for you for next time.
Thank you, Mr. Ducek.
Also, if I can I just touch on, I'm
sure.
Really excited to say we've spent a great deal of time out at the East Ranch here in those last couple days. We opened up a hole about 4 feet deep, for the size of the building, removed all the dirt, compacted it, and we had our compaction geosolutions out there to measure the compaction rate to make sure that it was adequate. We even had Mother Nature try to throw us a curveball in there with the rain, but we have that building compacted. We've had 3 biologists on site while the work was performed and performing tailgate training prior to. So we didn't unearth any Inca or Indian treasures out there. It was just mere dirt out there. So everything went really smooth except for the water connection, which we had some issues with a brand new fitting, which was just a bad cast. So we installed this new thing without having to isolate anything, and it was leaking from the minute we turned it back on. So unfortunately, we had a little interruption in service on Wednesday where we had to drain a couple thousand gallons to put that saddle on, because that's 250 PSI pressure on that 12-inch line. So we're not trying to install anything hot in that measure. So that's coming along really well. We've got the water line hooked up. The wastewater line is hooked up tomorrow. We'll have the biologist back on site, and you won't see any grading or any finished work done until February when we take receipt of the building then.
Okay. So this is East Ranch.
This is East Ranch restroom. Sorry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, Director Gray.
Thank you, President Scott. I don't want to take up too much time, but I was kind of, I couldn't resist maybe asking a question of Mr. Green off that little mini discussion we had about well levels between Santa Rosa and San Simeon. The WRF, you may be helpful if you could explain what the WRF would do to make it not so tense around the time when the gradient is going hitting zero, because that's kind of what WRF prevents.
It's exactly right? What it's engineered to do. Like I said, this isn't the magic bullet that's going to cure all of our water problems here, but this is exactly the time of season. So if we would have a regular CDP, this would have been something that we would have initiated pumping from there back in probably October or November as we're exiting that the dry season for Santa Rosa pumping. And so all that volume that we create, all that we re-inject, 60% of that goes to the aquifer level. So you won't see that drastic rebound and reduction during this time of year. And that would be perfect operation. This would be the exact operating scenario for that WRF right now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green.
Thank you.
Hey, so I have a question. Do the board members want to break now, or do you want to go ahead and do the consent agenda first?
I'd rather do consent first.
Okay. All right, so let's go on then to the consent agenda. This is agenda item 7, 7A, B, C, and D. And is there anything that any of the board members would like to pull off of this consent agenda? All right. So, is there... Sorry, Director Farmer.
There's nothing to be sorry about. It's your first day on the job. Hang in there. Don't be hard on yourself. Not as so, I want to ask a couple of questions with regard to the expenditure report. Thank you. So on page 56, down near the bottom, Badger Meter Incorporated, I think we've spent a little over $1 million with them so far. I see another bill here for $232,000. And I noticed the last two items there say remaining balance. So is it possible that this is like the last bill we'll receive from them? So now I'm not discounting the fact that we need this product. But.
Right. So now we've received 100% of the registers and endpoints that we need for replacement. And we had fantastic turnout we had for our mandatory RFP bid meeting back a week ago. We had 9 contractors come out, and hopefully we'll see 9 bids or proposals come our way. The closing for that is the 18th, where we'll have sealed bids, where we'll make our decision.
All right, thank you. On page 57, up at the top, there's an interesting item here. By the way, I brought it up with General Manager McElhaney yesterday, and he almost immediately, within like 15 seconds, says, "Oh, this is what it's about, Harry." But I thought I would bring it up anyway. As somebody else might be wondering, well, what does this mean here where it says final leak, repair, and rebuild cricket area on roof? This is at the fire department. So if someone could explain what a cricket area is. And if you can't, I know that Mr. McElhady can't. He told me yesterday, but I just thought it was a kind of a curious description.
Isn't the term for that a pitch? I'm sorry.
Oh,
area.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Director Gray. one more.
I think he would like to answer the question.
Oh, sure.
I can. You know, we talked on Director Farmer. We talked on Zoom for the boardwalk, and so
right.
And I know the chief probably has this answer right off the top of his head, but cricket is known as a saddle or a chimney diverter. Mm. So a small sloped area in a roof that diverts water away from obstructions like chimneys, skylights, things of that nature. And Bonilla is the company that did our emergency roof repair for the fire department, which had several areas where the roof's hanging in there, but there's other areas in which we were heading into the wet season and it couldn't wait to come before the board, essentially. So we had to do an emergency repair on several areas. I believe one of our fire captains has been woken up with some water all over them in the captain's bedroom. So we had to get that fixed pretty quickly. And we did it just in time as the rain started coming in.
Thank you.
We had to fix the cricket to make sure the
well, by Jiminy. Excuse you. And one more item, by the way. You set me up on that. I can pass it up. So on page 67 in the middle here, State Water Resources Control Board. So we've just paid them $1,700 and change for the annual stormwater permit fee. What is that about? It seems kind of, the way it's stated, I'm wondering, why do we need a permit for stormwater?
We capture all the stormwater during the initial rain events, and this is, again, part of that land discharge where we have to gather this data and we're reporting data, so this is just their fee for us doing our job and reporting to them. So that's their administrative fee to review that, and so we submit reports annually on that and so forth.
Gee, it seems like they should be paying us.
Yeah.
Never mind.
We provide the state a lot of information that takes a lot of staff hours every year for water and wastewater permits. So
it takes a lot of their staff time, is what you're saying.
It's our staff time that's preparing it. Yeah, like our electronic annual report, we probably put about 120, utility operational hours into that. You know, that's a 200-page document that dives into finance and operational measures, emergency response plan. So, yeah.
I appreciate that explanation. Thank you.
Yes.
Just another quick question. This is a question, not a request to move something off the agenda. 7D, on 7D, of the application for the Assistance to Firefighters Grants Program for training costs. I think the answer to this, but I think it's worth noting for the public's benefit that there's a 5% match, but this covers pretty much any of the training we do, doesn't it? I mean, Chief Berkey, in other words, we're spending that money anyway, I would assume. Yeah, yeah.
Is that all I needed to say?
Yeah, yeah. In other words, basically, we're not going to have to put out any money for something we wouldn't be doing to get this. It's to cover stuff we're already paying for. Thank you.
Yep, you need to stay because I think Vice President Thomas has a question.
thank you, President Scott. Yeah, and most of my questions have been answered, so thanks to my colleagues. But Bonilla and Bonilla, first time I've seen, expenditure to them. So how happy are you with their work? Where are they located? Where they come from?
Say the name again.
The roof repair company.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They were great. And I got them from Dave at FNR, so he's the one that kind of put me in touch with them, and we're still working. That was only half the project, so we're still working on the second half of the project, which is get our rain gutters completed and get them fixed. There's a significant amount of rust and deterioration on those that we're trying to get handled, but again, during this season, all of those companies that perform that work are very busy, and so we were trying to get them ahead of the storms and get all of those things taken care of, and thankfully we were able to get the actual roof and our firefighters safe from all of the rainwater. But we still have a long way to go as far as the outside and the rain gutter repair.
Thank you.
Hey, no more questions. We have a public comment on the consent agenda.
No.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other discussion? Okay. Let's go ahead and do I have a motion?
I move that the board adopt the consent agenda.
I'll second that.
Go ahead.
Let's hope I don't mess this up. Director Gray.
Aye.
Director Dean.
Aye.
Director Farmer.
Aye.
Vice President Thomas.
Aye.
President Scott.
Aye. Okay. Let's go ahead and then take a 10-minute break. Come back at 2:40. Sure.
Right on time.
It is loud. I know, just kind of. Are we ready? Okay. Thank you. During the break, I had a request from Director Farmer to
he'd like to make one more comment about the consent agenda.
Thank you, President. President Scott, by the way, I just heard Director Gray comment that your gavel's a little bit louder. So it's speak softly but carry a loud gavel, like
yes.
your motto. Just a couple of little corrections here in the minutes. Oh. On page 75, up at the top there under Board Member Communications, Director Thomas stated that a group of volunteers removed approximately 10 to 15 years of ice plant. I think that's supposed to say yards of ice plant.
Yeah.
And then also on page 77, almost halfway down, President Gray suggested that the general manager discuss a payment plan with a payment plan, the Nelsons. So I think it probably should meant to say payment plan with the Nelsons. So that's all.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And as long as we're talking about the yards, you might as well say cubic yards.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Good catch. I just scanned right by that.
Yeah, we don't need to do another. Okay, let's go then on to regular business. This is agenda item 8A. And I'm wondering if the Upper Salinas Las Tablas Resource Conservation District is online.
Hi, I'm here.
Hello, welcome.
Hello. Hey, thanks for having me. So I think it was maybe October or a few months ago, I spoke with you guys at the board meeting so that I could get a signed land access agreement to do some restoration work at Fiscalini. And you guys went ahead and approved that, but you did ask for a map and some pictures of the plants that we plan on planting and a more descriptive kind of idea of what we'd be doing. So I think you guys have that now. We plan on planting in an area where there's already been some pine trees planted, so it'll just kind of add to the biodiversity there and help to outcompete the non-native grass-like species that are growing. We won't be removing any native vegetation. We'll be doing some like weed whacking, but just enough to help us get the plants in the ground. You'll see some pictures on the last page of the plants that we know for sure we'll be planting. And you'll also see that the Santa Barbara Botanic Garden went down and collected seed. So depending on what they were able to grow, we might be adding some more plants as well. Anyone have any questions?
Does anyone have any questions? Yes, Director Gray.
Thank you, President Scott. Yeah, thank you for the report. Yeah. Thank you for the report and also the detail about the plantings. I just had a general question about the plants themselves that are natives, I know. Are there issues, maybe monitoring issues with, I think, cowrie brush? My understanding is that that could be a fire hazard when it goes up to a certain level. Yeah. Is there some monitoring of some of these understory plants that might be fire dangerous at some point?
I think if you have coyote brush growing and you have like the big plants and it's near structures, it could be a fire risk. But I think having it there in that area, it'll be kind of spread out. We're not going to be planting big plants. They'll be pretty small at first. It'll take a while for them to grow large. I don't think it should pose a big fire risk.
Thank you. Sorry.
Thank you.
Go on. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
We have an echo.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Vice President Thomas.
Thank you, President Scott.
Thank you, President Scott. Thank you, Ms. Lurk.
And great to see. I do a bit of volunteer work on Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, and these are all very familiar. This is what we see in the understory when the understory seems to be successful. And the fact that you've worked with the volunteers to gather seeds from the ranch. to me, the benchmark way to do this kind of restoration. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Director Dean.
Yes, and thank you for putting the pictures of the plants in here. I know I'm the one that asked for that. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah, of course.
You have another question?
I have a question.
I was just wondering. Something about that you
Are you going to propagate the seeds? No. So the Santa Barbara Botanic Garden, they're the ones who collected the seed and will be propagating and growing out the plants. And then they'll be bringing them up here next fall or winter. We haven't quite decided on a specific date yet, but I did talk to Kitty and it sounds like there's usually a volunteer event the Saturday or Sunday after Thanksgiving. So we were thinking about doing a community volunteer event to get all the plants in the ground then.
Are you Haley Lurk?
I am Haley Lurk.
Thank you so much for this wonderful report. I love the
pictures. Yeah, glad you liked it.
Director,
so the seeds that they collected, are they for plants different from what we're already looking at?
So mostly they're for the plants that you see here. They were trying to get some seed for some native grasses, but they weren't sure which ones they would be able to successfully propagate. So once we know kind of the success there, we'll be able to share with you if there's other species we'll be planting.
Oh, great, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Director Farmer.
Yes, thank you, President President Scott. Yes, Ms. Lurk, I just want to thank you also for the photos. It's always nice to see nature in her glory, even if it's just in a picture. And also, I just want to thank you for being available for this discussion. Thanks.
Of course.
Yes, Vice President Thomas.
Thank you, President Scott. And apologize for forgetting, but a great opportunity since it's related. The volunteers on Fiscally Ranch Preserve, Brian Morgan is leading a volunteer work party this Saturday, day after tomorrow. And yes, it may rain. And no, odds are he's not going to cancel if it rains, but I'll be there. And he's got lined up some very similar work to this, some understory planting in the greater area that's within the circle. So that's the first rain round of understory planting. So anyone listening wants a fun time Saturday morning, it really is a great way to spend a Saturday morning.
What time?
That's 10 a.m. Meeting at the Dolphin Bench.
Any other comments from the board? All right. Do we have any public comment?
No.
Hey. Thank you so much for the presentation. Really appreciate that. All right, let's go to agenda item 8B. This is a discussion about the Standing Committee and liaison appointments. So, Mr. McElhaney, will you please present this agenda item?
It would be my pleasure, Madam President. Agenda item 8B, discussion and consideration of Standing Committee Chair and liaison appointments. There's no fiscal impact associated with this item. The Board of Directors should review and appoint one CCSD board member as a chairperson to each one of the standing committees. Section 3.1 of the CCSD Standing Committee Bylaws identifies an appointment method. The chairperson shall be chosen annually from its members of the Board of Directors by a majority vote of the board. The current committee chairpersons are as follows: Finance Committee, Director Gray; Resources and Infrastructure Committee, Director Dean; PROS Committee, Vice President Thomas. And with that, I'll turn it over to the board.
Okay, thank you. So do I have any, nothing from the directors? I would like to ask an opinion from our attorney. Because we do have, as part of this agenda item, we do have the adoption of part of the bylaws, right? Yes, bylaws. And since part of the bylaws does still list the policy committee, I'm wondering if we could strike anything about the policy committee from this document so that we are
approving a document that is accurate to date. Does that make
yes. sense? Yes. Okay. As long as we're very specific with the language we're deleting, yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, so if there's no other comments from the board members, I'd like to know, is any public comment about this?
No.
Okay. So I'm wondering if we can have discussion about this agenda item.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, President Scott. Yeah, I had a couple of questions. I had to remind myself how many things are in this one agenda item, but I had a couple of questions. One had to do with the liaison appointments, and then further out on the, well, there's actually three things. One is on the schedule, the bylaw revision for the full day meeting. I had a question there, or a question or a suggestion. And then on the scheduling of the committee meetings, I also had a question. First of all, they're all, oh, eight, I'm sorry. Oh, wait a second. Well, here we are. I was confused.
Yeah, that's
okay. You're in luck. Yes. Yeah, you're in luck. You don't have to deal with this question right now. Thank you.
President Thomas?
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to be, I think when we do the bylaws, we're going to be talking about a fourth standing committee.
Right.
So do we appoint the chairperson now or later for that new committee?
My preference would be that we appoint the chair later.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you can't really.
Just really.
You can't.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
And you can't really appoint the chair before the committee's created.
Yes. Okay. Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're doing 8B.
Yeah. So I got one by on one for 8B.
Okay. Let's do 8B.
Liaison.
Yes.
Appointments. I wanted to see if we could discuss any adding any other entities that we might want to have liaison appointments for, to track and to follow them. My thinking is that there's some agencies like LAFCO, the Local Tourism Board, possibly the Resource Conservation District, that do have activities or powers or even budgets that have some relevance to us in terms of spending money here or having a say in our activities and a relationship with other jurisdictions such as the county. And I wanted to open up for a little discussion on that to see if we want this list to be expanded and maybe. Maybe I don't know if we need all of these either. I mean, but we should re-examine the list, see what we might want to do to change it, if anything.
And what about, so I've been a liaison for the Coastal Commission. What about adding the Resource Water Quality Control Board? Because they do have meetings here in San Luis Obispo.
Possibility?
Say that again, Resource.
Resource Water Quality Control Board.
Okay. So part of a decision that we make, we'll need to go ahead and say what we wanted to add. Is there any that we want to delete? Yes, Director Farmer.
Thank you. I don't know about deleting it, but does the San Simeon CSD even exist anymore?
No, I think we should. I think we should delete it. So we've had LAFCO, the Local Tourism Board, and the Resource Water Quality Control Board to add.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's
start with the discussion. Let's separate these two things, and let's go ahead and look at the committee chairs. Are there any changes that we want to make to those at this point? We'll leave those alone. So, any other discussion?
I, Yeah, I would just want to add on the committee chairs. When the new committee is constituted next month, there will be a change in this. People expect a change because one of the directors obviously is going to be chair of that fourth committee, and so that will have some effect. People should be aware that it'll have some effect on this list. So it could be some sort of temporary.
So we'll have to have that on the board agenda at that point.
Yeah, I think we do. Okay.
All right. So what do y'all think about those entities, adding those entities to the current liaison appointments? Yes, no? And if so, or what do we have? I don't know if we want to go ahead and, Mr. Carmel, do we want to do this in two different agenda items or two different motions?
Tim, you're muted.
It's up to you, but it's probably better to do them separately.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So let's go ahead and do I have, well, let's do a public comment before we go ahead with any further discussion.
There's no public comment.
You like a motion?
Yes, well, please.
Do we have an opportunity for discussion?
Oh, sure. The motion? Sure.
Thinking through the entities suggested are potentially good ideas. We haven't had any reflection or soak time. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking that maybe someone scopes out a bit of what is it we would want to accomplish in terms of influencing and learning from LAFCO, CTB, et cetera, and bring that back rather than just vote straight up, kind of. It's almost a coin toss at this point.
Yes.
That's a very good.
Yes.
I think it's a very good suggestion because we have to kind of also figure out who would want to and be the appropriate person for the liaisons. And also we could look over the other lists, other names in the list, other groups in the list, and say maybe we should move somebody from one of those to something else too. So, and that's a matter of who wants to do it.
Yeah.
So maybe both the board members can reflect and offer their volunteering or off their suggestions, and we come back to the next agenda when we're dealing with the fourth committee.
Yes.
So it'll be sort of thematically the same thing. I would continue this, in other words, the ninth.
Yes. Everybody okay with that? Continue this agenda item to the ninth, January 9th. Okay, great.
That part of the agenda item, though, I think the other part.
Well, the committee, we can even leave because all of you are saying you want to stay where you are for right now. Okay. All right. Let's go to 8C now, where I got ahead of myself.
I did too.
Yeah. All right. So this is agenda item 8C. And Mr. McElhaney, would you like to present this agenda item?
Thank you, President Scott.
Yeah.
Agenda item 8C, discussion and consideration of adoption of resolution 352024, amending the board and standing committee bylaws, adoption of resolution 362024, establishing the 2025 CCSD regular board meeting schedule, and adoption of resolution 372024, establishing the 2025 CSD standing committee meeting schedule. The budget includes a maximum of $600 per month for each director for attending such meetings as established by state law. And with that, I'll turn it over to you, President Scott.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. McElhaney. I do would like, we did have an ad hoc committee that addressed some of the changes that are here in this document. And could I ask Director Dean if she could present those changes?
So on the Board of Directors bylaws, we tried to simplify 1.4 on the election of officers. There was a lot of language in there that we felt we didn't need. And so we eliminated most of it and replaced it with board members shall rotate into the positions of board president and vice president, with the president being a board member who has not held the position of president during the last 4 years and who has previously served as vice president. A board member shall have served a minimum of 1 year on the board to becoming eligible for the position of vice president. Following 1 year of service as president, the board member shall rotate back into the position of board member. Any board member may decline their appointment as president or vice president, and the appointment of officers shall be subject to the affirmative vote of the full board. We part of the reason we made these changes is because this board continued on the same as it is, and with no changes. Mm-hmm. And so when we were looking at a person who has not held the position of president, we decided maybe it should have a time period on which we're looking at that. And also we felt it was important that before becoming vice president, you should have a full year on the board, because it takes some getting used to being on the board and how things, what our duties are and how things are run. So, and then also we added that the term of office should be for 1 year. We felt it would be fair if everyone on the board had an opportunity at some point to at least be vice president and president. But that's the main change we made in that. And then also the time period that a meeting is held, and that would be under 2.4. So since we're going to one meeting a month, we put in there that the meeting shall be conducted for no more than a six-hour period instead of a three-hour period, and that we could have closed session during our lunch break. I think that was the main one on the main ones on the board of directors. Somewhere in here, and I can't remember if it's the standing committee or the board one. We also added that a director should only chair one committee at a time.
Standing committee, I think.
Standing committee.
And then an additional one, since we've had this discussion just recently, is that under standing committees 9.2, we should delete policy committee.
Right.
So parks and recreation and open space would become 9.2C. And we would delete policy.
Wait a second.
I think that's the only place where it.
This is in the board bylaws, right?
Yeah, in the board. Yeah. Board bylaws.
Oh, 9.2.
Yes. 9.2C. Yes. Yes. And then we can go to the standing committee bylaws. And where we would need to delete would be on page 103, 1.6.3, the policy committee, that paragraph A and B would be deleted. And the part that Director Dean just talked about what is under committee officers, 3.1. Director may not serve as a chairperson of more than one standing committee at a time. And I think that's it.
Right. When we deleted 1.6.3 for the policy committee, that means we're changing 1.6.4 to 1.6.3.
Did you get all of those?
Yes.
Okay. Right.
Additions?
Yeah, and then the other thing is that's part of this agenda item is the schedule. Mm-hmm. What is the discussion around the schedule?
On the bylaws. I'm not done.
Oh, you're not done with that. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I don't think I asked for comment.
Yeah.
So the only other revision on the bylaws that would be appropriate on page 95, 1.4, you know, in the blue font, third line from the bottom, says, following 1 year of service as president, the board member shall rotate back to the position of board member.
Right.
And what you mean is the president shall rotate back. Or it says the right. Board member.
I guess.
Yeah.
I guess you could, yeah. But, of course, that person is a board member, even if they're president.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's
Then you might say that board member.
Yeah, that, okay. That board member.
It's not specific.
Yeah.
Yeah, that board member.
Okay, that board member.
Yeah, I had a question and a suggestion for on the meeting length revision. And I should have asked you for recognition there.
That's okay.
Yes, okay.
That's okay.
2.4. You changed 3 hours to six,
right,
which is logical. I'm just wondering about the, you know, how a typical day would go, a typical meeting would go, since it has a lunch break, like an hour lunch break in it, as opposed to the brief breaks you take now, which are included in the time of the, right, you know, the total time of the meeting. What would happen to the lunch break in that context? Would that be part of the total 6 hours, or would there be like the 6 hours exclusive of a lunch break? Because it's a lot, you know, it's automatically going to be, if it's part of the 6 hours, you're basically giving 5 hours, which might not be enough time.
Well, I think this is really a good concept to discuss because, number one, I don't know if we need a full hour for lunch. The other thing is if we use the lunch time for a closed session, I kind of wanted to just leave it 6 hours so that we could be flexible. I don't know. Is that what you were thinking too?
Yeah, and I think the time we break for lunch should be dependent on the agenda and up to the discretion, right, of the president.
So that sets up the standard time frame of 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.,
right.
Reasonable. We always have the opportunity to extend.
Yeah.
There's never been a situation in my 2 years here that we need to extend and someone on the board has denied that. So 10 to 4 is at least that would be what we predict. And I, for one, wouldn't schedule another meeting at 4:15.
No.
No. Of course, yeah. So maybe the we'll keep it unspecific. Though as a practice, we might say 45 minutes or something like for lunch, and somebody will bring us food.
Yeah, and it'll depend on, you know, what the agenda.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. So part of this agenda item is also schedule of the committee meetings. And I do want to say that, well, let's first look at the Board of Directors' regular meeting schedule. Is that going to be okay with everybody?
Yep.
Okay. And yes,
but we do need to add the time 10 a.m. to this list.
Oh, okay. 10 a.m. Okay. We want to say 10 to 4. I mean, it's 6 hours.
Okay. 10 a.m. Yeah.
All right. And then we have the committee meeting schedule. And, yeah, we only have Parks and Recreation and R&I and the Finance Committee. And we are going to have another one. And there has been some discussion that maybe these times don't work for the people who are going to be the chair of these committees or based on the members of the committees. So we should have a discussion about that. Yes.
Okay. I polled the current R&I committee, and everyone is fine with these dates and these times. And as current chair, I'm fine with it too for R&I.
Okay. Thank you.
I did the same with the finance committee members, not all of whom may be signing up again, but at the time they were fine with that 10 o'clock Monday time.
Okay.
I had one suggestion, though, for the fourth committee, where it was going to be on Thursday, the Thursday. We don't do this, but we don't have to do anything formal now, but I think next month when we come back, I think the 10 o'clock slot on Thursday would probably be appropriate for it, rather than the 3 o'clock slot where health policy was meeting. I think it's more convenient for people.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then how about as the PROS committee does? Is 1 o'clock still good for you?
Thank you. And when we get to, the committee has in the past preferred 2 p.m. Mm-hmm. I've polled the committee, and they're okay with the 1 p.m.
Well, I think 2 p.m. is fine, if that's what you want to do.
problems over here.
If we're certain that we're not going to conflict, well, I mean, and the 1 p.m. is okay too. But I do want to, you know, let's do the dates first, because there is you know, one set of dates that conflicts. So we would prefer to strike the April 17 and May 15 meetings and replace that with an April 29 meeting. And, you know, as we have done in the past with other committees when, you know, when a known conflict, when a conflict is known prior to publishing, you know, the other committees have indicated that. So we'll strike April 17, May 15, and replace that with one meeting, Tuesday, April 29.
I have thoughts about that.
Tuesday?
Yeah, I have thoughts about that, because I would say probably the main reason that we changed these dates to Mondays and Thursdays was for staff, so that they could concentrate the committee meetings on Mondays and Thursdays. And there's always the opportunity to do a special meeting. So you just cancel this meeting and then do the special meeting, letting the committee members know ahead of time that that's what's going to happen.
Okay. And if we've, in fact, already done that and looked ahead and selected the date, I mean, like my philosophy is, why not do it right the first time if we know that's what we want to do? But
well, I'm open for discussion on that.
Okay.
Does staff have input?
From a staff perspective, I can't say what the availability of staff would be on these new dates, given it's so far ahead. That's the 29th of April. I'm sure someone will be available for him. I don't want to speak for Mrs. Dodson, but you know, for her, she just cancels a meeting and reschedules it, so that's not difficult. If the board chooses to schedule it now on the 29th, board's prerogative. As far as staff availability, I don't have an answer necessarily for...
Or...
Staff gets a twofer, basically. In other words, cancel two meetings and then replace it with one. It sounds like a reduction in overall staff time. But.
How about just doing it as soon as we're done? You know what I'm saying? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so if you're going to be forming a fourth committee, and we're looking at that fourth committee being in the morning on the same day as the pros, right, is that going to be a problem for staff? Because staff will have those two meetings on the two dates that Director Thomas wants to change, plus this meeting.
Yeah, that's why I really like to leave the schedule as it is and then have special meetings, because you never know what's going to happen.
Yep.
So that makes three meetings instead of two meetings.
My thinking, if you have you want to replace two meetings with one meeting, the first choice should be which of those two existing dates would you want to use for the one meeting, and just have a two-month break. I think that would be the best, the first, that's plan A. Yeah. You know, if you can do that, then you don't have to worry about finding a time that's just off the schedule.
Yeah.
Well, interesting, considering that both resources, infrastructure, and finance a year ago did this very thing with the, I believe, November or December meeting. So I thought this would be a common practice. I don't understand the pushback.
Just because we put them on 2 days just for staff. Yes, Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Scott. It might be me. Maybe I'm just being a bit too detailed here on the semantics of the description here. So let me read this. I'll just read the one under pros. Meetings will be held on the Thursday following the regular board meeting at 1 p.m. I find that could be slightly confusing. I think maybe if it read, meetings will be held on Thursday at 1 p.m. the week following the regular board meeting, I think that adds a little bit more clarity. Now, if nobody feels that's necessary, then so be it. But
That's just our staff report wording, and that won't be published that way.
Yeah. That's just the staff.
Okay. So did the observation I make have some kind of merit or anything like that?
It always does.
The check's in the mail. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Director Farmer. Okay. So any further discussion? Hey, do we have a motion? It's going to be a big one motion.
Try.
Yeah.
I move. This covers, should we do a separate?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do the easy one first.
Okay.
It's the easy one because there's no debate about it. I think this is for the bylaws.
Yes.
I move that the proposed new version of the board of the board and we do with the ones standing committee bylaws be approved with the changes noted. And do I have to do the changes? The changes highlighted and in the proposal, and I think that covers it. Oh yes, but with the following changes in addition to those highlighted in the proposed version, under standing committees, Section 9.2 in the board bylaws, eliminate policy and, in other words, that category C, and make parks, recreation, open space, Section C, number C. And then under the standing committee bylaws, eliminate, under the standing committee statements of purpose and responsibilities, eliminate 163, both parts A and B, and make the Parks, Recreation, Open Space Committee section below that 163. And I think that covers the changes in addition to the changes already marked.
There was one additional change to the Board of Director bylaws under Section 1.4. You guys wanted the sentence to read, following 1 year of service president, that the board member shall rotate.
Yes,
That board member. Yeah, okay. Exactly. Thank you. Yeah, that board member as opposed to just the board member. Yeah. And those are the changes.
Okay.
And then can the motion reference resolution number 35-2024?
Let me finish my thought here. Okay. Yes, I move that the board adopt resolution. Let's see.
35-2024.
Amending the Cambria Community Services District Board and Standing Committee bylaws with the changes noted in my earlier remarks.
I'll second the motion.
Hey, thank you. Oh, public comment.
There is none.
Okay.
Are you ready for a motion?
Yes, okay. Please.
Director Gray.
Aye.
Director Dean.
Aye.
Director Farmer.
Aye.
Vice President Thomas.
Aye.
President Scott.
Aye. Hey, now let's go to the second part, the schedule.
Schedule, yes.
Is this part of the resolution?
It's a different resolution.
Yes, Mr. Carmel.
It's resolution 36-2024.
Okay. Oh, here it is. 36-2024.
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
If there's no discussion further. I move that the board approve the resolution, proposed resolution number 36-2024, establishing the CCSD regular board meeting schedule and the regular board meeting schedule, we'll do that one first, with the addition of 10 a.m. after each of the dates on the schedule.
I'll second that.
Ready for the roll call.
Director Gray.
Aye.
Director Dean.
Aye.
Director Farmer.
Aye.
Vice President Thomas.
Aye.
President Scott.
Aye. Next resolution, number 37-2024. Do I have a motion?
Have we resolved Director Thomas's issue with the dates?
No.
No, but we can discuss it more if you want.
No, I just wondered if we're approving it as written, then the dates are April and May.
That would be one motion that could be made.
Also have discussion following the motion, too.
Yeah.
Well, I'll move that we approve resolution number 37-2024, establishing the 2025 CCSD Finance Parks Recreation Open Space and Resources and Infrastructure Standing Committee regular schedules. And then, yes, we need discussion after somebody seconds.
I'll second it.
Okay, so let's discuss.
Well, we've gone on a circle. I don't see the need for further discussion, personally.
Okay. Let's go ahead and do a roll call then.
Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Vice President Thomas?
Aye. I can live with it.
President Scott?
Aye. Can you do it? Okay. Thank you. Great. Yeah. Okay. Let's go to agenda item 8D, and I would like General Manager McElhaney to go ahead and present this agenda item.
Thank you, President Scott. Agenda item 8D, discussion and consideration to direct staff to advertise for positions on the standing committees. There's no fiscal impact. We do this every year, so we will, the current Finance, Parks, Rec, Open Space, R&I committee appointments expire on February 1st, 2025. And this is looking for direction from the board to advertise for those open positions. And I'll turn it over to you.
What I'd like to do is to draw your attention to the changes that have been made on the CCSD Standing Committee application form, where it does say that we're excited to announce the formation of a new standing committee focused on fire preparedness beginning in 2025. And it asks people if they're interested in applying to be on that committee that they can mark the fourth box. So I thank you very much for updating that application. Discussion?
Just a question, actually. Yeah. Given that the I'm not sure what is when this is posted, when this application goes out, is the what we have now with this with the bylaws that are attached to this, of course, the old version of the bylaws. I'm assuming that when we post this, it will be. Do we post this with the bylaws of the committees, the Senate committee bylaws?
Yes, and I will do that tonight, okay, and I will update the bylaws before I blast it out.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Make a motion.
Any?
Is this okay? So we haven't actually formed that new standing committee yet,
no.
So there won't be anything in the bylaws. It's a description of the responsibilities.
No.
That's okay.
That's fine.
Okay. Yeah.
Then I'll move we approve the directing staff advertise for the vacancies on the board. We didn't have public comment, sorry.
Yes, do we have public comment?
No.
Okay, thank you.
That was a motion then.
I'll second it.
Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Vice President Thomas?
Aye.
President Scott?
Aye.
It's also important to note, it's in our application preface there, that if you apply for one of these committees, the current committees, and you don't, you know, you could also be considered for that new committee, even if you don't check the box. If you check the box, it helps, but your application is good for 2 years, I believe.
Right. Yeah. Let's go then to agenda item 8E, and this is a presentation by our general manager, McElhaney, and so I would ask you to go ahead and make that presentation, please.
My pleasure. Thank you, board, staff. Agenda item 8E, presentation on the results of the district-wide staff's strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, their SWOT analysis.
The genesis of this actually was born out of conversations with President Scott. I'm going to walk over here, a little bit of an echo. With President Scott and now Director Gray, talking about our future strategic planning workshops and how do we begin that. And so some of that robust conversation from the directors was getting an opinion from staff on some of our thoughts on strength, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Staff is really the one that's the closest to a lot of our infrastructure, our operations, and they have a lot of valuable input that I don't think that we've tapped into most recently in some of these past strategic planning. There's some input when we do have the workshops, but what we wanted to do was gather some information from staff that's really unencumbered. So we held a two-day workshop on November 12th and 13th that had all of our staff, to include union staff, come in. And we sat in here at the Vets Hall and did kind of a round table. And I spoke with staff and I said, you know, the board really wants to hear from you on what you think, you know, our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats are to the district. And I conveyed to them that it was to be unencumbered, to speak freely. So we put up the big screen and we did a word cloud where everybody logged into their cell phones and they were able to blurt out whatever they wanted in terms of these different areas, starting with strengths. Now I want to preface that there are some things in this presentation that are sometimes not very popular topics in the district. Things of benefits assessments, things of merging with San Simeon. So those things are to come up. And again, this was not a board adopted or board sanctioned SWOT analysis in terms of this is where the board is going, this is what the board wants, this is what staff's input was. So I just want to preface that because there will be some things on here that will stir some emotions in the community from some of staff's opinion. But that was the direction from President Scott and Director Graves to get that input. And so I thought it only fair, if we're going to do this, that we actually share some of those thoughts. Next slide. And next slide. So some of our strengths. We have a lot of experienced staff. They're highly skilled, they're experienced, and they've been in their own unique and individual industry for quite a while. We have robust infrastructure. Now we know we have infrastructure needs. I know we have infrastructure repairs, but in general, if you were to look at the district, we have a significantly robust infrastructure within the district. Next slide. Some of our other strengths are how we collaborate. The change in management over the last couple years, from finance director, from utilities manager, GM, fire chief, and then some of the change in staff, we've really come together. We're really starting to click. And so this is some of the input from our own staff on our own internal relationships. And so that was really nice to see. We ourselves are working really well together. We respect each other. There's not much animosity. You know, everybody is really working well, clicking together, and things are starting to move in the right direction. And I think overall, the culture has changed. The morale has changed. And that's a testament to some of the staff that's sitting here today. Community engagement, I think we've done a really good job, not only as the board and staff, but we're putting ourselves out there and engaging the community. Mrs. Dodson and myself and utilities manager and Denise and the fire chief will all come down and sit at the Vets Hall for an entire day just to listen to the community about various different things. The chief has done a great job. There he is. The chief has done a great job sitting down here and having community members come in and talk about these open space parcels and weed abatement and tree threats. And he's listened to them, and he's obviously very compassionate, and he's connected with the community, which I don't think we really have that connection from a staff level to the community. So putting ourselves here and allowing them to come and talk to us is a huge strength of the district. Next slide. Institutional knowledge. You take a look at Utilities Manager Green, and he's well-versed in the district's infrastructure. He has years and years of experience, and he's carried that over into his role managing a lot of the different projects within the district. The fire chief is well-respected in his field. He has the respect of almost every fire chief in this county, all of his crew, all of his staff, and especially myself. Transparency, that's always a great buzzword. We've done a good job with transparency. I know there's some community members that will differ with that statement, but we've done an incredible job over the last year and a half of being more transparent. Putting out community letters, Ms. Dodson runs our next door accounts, and anything of any significance that happens in the district, she's doing a blast out before I can even mention it to her. She's already drafted it. So we're being incredibly more transparent than I think we have in the past. We're trying to put out as much information as we can. I'm sending out community letters every 2 weeks, trying to give everybody an update on all the different things that are happening in the district. So I definitely think that's one of our strengths. Next slide. Repaired relationships. When I was first hired, we talked about repairing our relationships with the Coastal Commission. Now, while we have a long ways to go, we've engaged them in conversations. We've had several meetings over the last year and a half to gain some insight on where we kind of went wrong with this project in the WRF. And it's a strong, controversial project, and they have strong feelings, and we have strong feelings, and the community has strong feelings, but we're at least engaging in the dialogue. And there's mutual respect that's being grown there. Jim has done a great job with the county, with our regulators, Mr. Green, excuse me, state parks. There was a lot of fractured relationships, I think, with the CCSD and some of our leadership, and that has changed. And those conversations are happening, and we're starting to have this open dialogue that I think before was stunted. Next slide. Again, with staff, they are dedicated. You'll see our water and wastewater staff out here around the clock fixing various different leaks. We have a couple management staff that came from the union staff, and they're putting in 60 and 70 hours a week on salary, you know, when they used to make overtime. You know, they're sacrificing their time with their family to come in and fix our district's infrastructure needs. Our fire department, same thing. The chief is here all the time. He came to the Fiscalini Ranch fundraiser just a weekend ago on his Saturday, you know, to spend time with the community. So the staff dedication is a huge strength for us. We're also able to adapt. We're flexible. We adapt. We embrace new challenges. We take on those challenges head on. I like to think our staff doesn't let it faze us too much. There's going to be hurdles in every government organization, in every project, but we have become, we've got a little bit of a stiff upper lip, I would say, that maybe wasn't there before. Next slide. We've been proactive. Again, Mr. Green's been amazing getting out ahead of a lot of these different regulatory changes. We talk about our infrastructure as far as charging stations, applying for a grant for fast chargers to get ahead of what's coming in 2035 with a zero EV fleet. So we're being proactive. Again, our collaboration, not only with among staff, but regulators, is one of our greatest strengths. Next slide. Culture of caring. This kind of goes to what I was speaking about with staff. Staff cares. They care about each other. They care about the board. They care about the community. And so we're trying to foster that, feed that, and nurture that over the next couple years. Next slide. Our weaknesses. So as a small special district, we have limited resources. We have limited means to raise revenue. There's water and wastewater rates, and there is essentially our property taxes. There's not a lot of other methods to acquire funding based on our limited resources. When we talk about staffing constraints, budget restraints, infrastructure restraints, a lot of it has to do with our ability to manage our limited resources. At times, we get siloed in our departments. You know, we spoke about this a little bit with the formation of this potential fire protection committee, is that the fire department can be on an island sometimes. They're really self-sufficient. The fire chief has done a great job of managing his department, but at times we get siloed. I know admin does. We can get caught up in our own little world and not step outside of that world and check in on water and wastewater. And the same goes for water and wastewater. They get siloed in their own departments. So we're trying to bring that out. Some of that is with these staff get-togethers and barbecues and things of that nature, is to try to get us out of our silos and start connecting with one another. Accessibility. We're remote. Much like San Simeon, Cambria is a remote, and we're not close to a lot of different resources. When we talk about emergency response, we have a CAL FIRE engine, excuse me, here in Cambria. There's an engine out of Cayucas, and then our closest engine besides that is Morro Bay and Templeton. So we are in a little bit of an island here, so there is some accessibility issues, resource issues. Another one of our weaknesses and operational challenges is our aging infrastructure. So while our infrastructure is robust, it's aging, and it's aging rapidly. And we may or may not have been prepared or been preparing in past leadership for this aging infrastructure. And that is coming upon us rapidly. As we know, our effluent line, temporary effluent line that needs to be replaced, you know, that's a large project that's going to be potentially $4 to $5 million. That hasn't been budgeted or planned. And there's more of those planned or unplanned emergencies that are beneath our feet right now that we really need to acknowledge. Next slide. There's environmental risks, threats of floods, droughts. We are in a tsunami zone, which threatens our district infrastructure. We do have revenue constraints. Some of those revenue constraints have to do with our current business model, our economic model. This is some of the uncomfortable conversations. We're in a zero growth period with the moratorium for 20 years. So with no growth, even at a 1% growth, with no growth, there is no more revenue coming in for the district. There's no more property taxes. There's no more connection fees. There's no water and wastewater rates that can help fund our district moving forward as far as our infrastructure goes. Now, we all acknowledge that water is the barrier to that, and Mr. Green and I are working on those options and how we can find a sustainable water source. But if we take that out of the equation, if we had the water source, this is a discussion that should be had, is how does this district continue to operate when our population is stagnant, the infrastructure needs are climbing, the repairs and the amount of money that we're going to need to spend to keep this district afloat has to have some source of funding moving forward, unless it's going to be on the backs of the ratepayers that live here. So if it's the same population of 4,000 residents, those 4,000 residents will bear the burden of these increasing costs unless we find a way to change that economic model. Now, this isn't a debate about growth or no growth. It's just that's the business model, is if there is no growth, there is no more incoming revenue to address these changing, these ever-increasing infrastructure demands. We have two fire engines that need to be replaced. Again, a $5,000 effluent line, a transmission line that needs to be replaced. And did I say 5,000? Can we get it for 5,000? $5 million, excuse me. A lot of these things are coming, and they're not going to stop, and these things will continue to come. So not a debate about growth or no growth, but it is something that we need to look at, and this is what staff brought up. This is a limited business model. It's a failing business model if you really were to think about it that way, unless we continue to raise rates. Next slide. This is one that was brought up by staff specifically, is the blurring of the lines between board involvement in operations versus policy setting. And so because we have a very active board, and it might not just have been this board, it could have been previous boards, but the bleeding and the blurring of the lines of where directors might get too involved in the operational piece and not so much staying in the policy lane. And so staff spends a lot of time in committee meetings, board meetings, and does get a lot of input from directors. But there was some sediment of that those lines have been blurred a little bit, which does make it difficult operationally to continue operating this way. Recruitment and retention. We try to stay competitive on wages, but we are remote, and most of our staff doesn't live here in Cambria. It's expensive to live in Cambria. There's housing challenges and shortages, and often you can live in Paso Robles, Templeton, Morro Bay, Los Osos, and have a more affordable rent or a more affordable mortgage. So it limits our ability to recruit employees, and there's a commuting effect. You know, there's money spent in fuel and things of that nature. And sometimes we're competing with San Luis County, City of Morro Bay, things like that for some of our staffing. So it does become a little bit of a problem.
I think we have opportunities as we look into the future about optimizing our revenue streams, looking at other funding sources. We've obviously started to really dip our toes into the grant world. Credit to Mr. Green and Mr. Reaper and Mr. Johnson, who have helped really solidify our skate park grant. That is one of our largest grants, I think, that we've gotten, at least for Parks, Rec, and Open Space. I know we've had other grants for utilities, but we need to start looking at more grants and how we capitalize on those revenue streams. We're limited by the fact that we don't get any tourism tax. You know, we're limited on the property tax we get. There was discussion of regionalization, which is another uncomfortable conversation, but San Simeon is in the process of dissolution, and is there a potential for, through economies of scale, to connect and take over a portion of San Simeon's responsibilities for water and wastewater? Is there an opportunity to work with the county and have them share some of those property taxes or tourism taxes in exchange for helping San Simeon with their water and wastewater? Again, we haven't been in any robust discussions with the county. This is something that just staff brought up. Is there something through economies of scale in which some sort of merger with San Simeon would create a benefit for Cambria? Direct potable reuse, toilet to tap, as they say, that's coming. That's going to come, and I know Mr. Green can speak to that in future reports, but that's an opportunity for enhancing our water sustainability. And ultimately, finding a new water source. Are there going to be allocations opened up for state water at Whale Rock? Can there be a pipeline put into Whale Rock that could provide water? A long ways away, but it's something that staff was looking at. Next slide. Financial opportunities. This is another uncomfortable. Again, same population, same infrastructure needs, same failing infrastructure. Without any other means of revenue generation, the conversation for staff, we will have to look at some sort of benefits assessment, tax assessments, bond measures. Do we think about the divestiture of Parks and Rec to the county? Because as we know, our Facilities and Resources Department, Parks, Rec, and Open Space has never been funded properly. And so in order to entertain a community park, in order to continue to maintain the ranch in which this community has become accustomed, something has to change financially. Again, perspectives from staff. Is there an opportunity to sell CCSD parcels and get those off of our books and allow those to be maintained by somebody else? That was brought up. Next slide. Water revenue analysis. Mr. Green brought this up. Is there a way to take a look at our water revenue analysis and find ways to optimize it to become more efficient? Out-of-county strike teams is a big one. Our fire department, if we had engines that were in a little better shape, gets called every single fire season to go out of county to support these large campaign fires. And those out-of-county assignments, believe it or not, bring in a lot of revenue to the fire department because they're essentially paying for all of the staffing. They pay for the equipment. There's a daily fee for using your equipment, and that actually brings in a significant amount of revenue. Some of our limitations on taking advantage of that has been engines and their condition. Previously, it was a staffing issue. Now we're a little more well-staffed, so there's an opportunity for us to send more engines out of county and create a revenue source for the fire department. Next slide. Threats. We already know we have some environmental threats. Weathers, droughts, flooding, fires. There's potential for economic downturns, recessions, supply chain disruptions, and all of that can affect our district's financial stability. There's constant public and regulatory threats in terms of changing policy. Policy at the state of California is changing all the time, and that affects us. Again, zero EV fleet. Excuse me. Zero EV fleet is another one that is gonna affect us in terms of, all right, how do we plan to change out or to replace a lot of our fuel-based vehicles, gas and diesel. Next slide. Again, more environmental threats. Creek exposure. This has been a topic in R&I quite a bit about how close we are, flood zone, some of our infrastructure right in that flood zone by the creek, and you can see from the one of our most recent storms how badly that floods. Our trunk line vulnerabilities, our aging trunk line is prone to cracks and damage. This is a lot of that infrastructure underneath our feet that is going to break and will continue to break over the next few years as we evaluate our position. Drought, climate change, that's always been a concern for the community. We've been out of a drought for a significant period of time, but there's only a matter of time before it comes upon us again. Next slide.
Mr. McElhaney, could I ask the board if we can extend the meeting till 4:30?
Absolutely.
Aye.
No problem with that.
I'll try to speed
Thank
it up.
You. That's okay.
Economic and external threats. Again, the zero growth, not meant to be a political debate, but it does affect our ability to raise revenue. So if we have a zero growth mentality, a lot of these infrastructure needs, again, will be placed on the backs of the same ratepayers. Inflationary pressure, increasing tourism. So eventually when Highway 1 opens back up, we're going to see significantly more tourism come through. That does strain some of our public safety resources. I know it strains the water and wastewater department. And we really don't see any revenue from that from the county. The county really gets all of the tourism tax. And so we don't even realize the benefits of our beautiful community that draws so much tourism, and we don't see any of it. And that's part of the downside of being a special district. And again, regulatory restrictions. We all know what we're going through with the Coastal Commission on how we're trying to permit our water reclamation facility. And we're engaged in dialogue with mitigation that should have been done years ago but hasn't. Trying to get the Coastal Commission to come to the table and tell us, you know, what we need to do mitigation-wise in order to get this permitted, along with all the other information hold. But these are a lot of the regulatory and compliance issues that we see as a special district. Next slide. Community support, a double-edged sword. So as much as we try to engage the community, be transparent, put the information out there, the misinformation train is strong here in Cambria. We see it in our public comments, we see it on Nextdoor, and that creates a drain on staff and can undermine and disrupt our district initiatives. So as we try to put as much information as we can out there and be transparent as we can and be as honest as we can, we will see the misinformation spewed at the podium that tries to derail what we're trying to do. And it weighs on staff, but again, we're resilient and we're going to keep moving it forward. Cyber attacks, as we move into this next century of AI, computers, digitizing, you know, cyber threats are a concern. Next slide. So we've kind of touched base on this already, but we have some infrastructure vulnerabilities, and we continue to. Regulatory compliance challenges, Mr. Green can speak to those ad nauseum. Next slide. So 2025 and beyond. This is where staff wanted to come to the board, present this to you on how we move forward strategically and to open that dialogue. I think, without a doubt, and I think staff would agree, and I think a lot of this community would agree, we have the best board that we've had in better part of a decade. We've had the best staff that we've had in the better part of a decade. So I think this is our opportunity as staff and as the board to guide this community and this district in the right direction moving forward. Are there going to be tough conversations? Absolutely. Tough conversations are going to be in front of us. There's no doubt about that. But I think if we work collaboratively, I think if we think outside the box, I think if we have the tough discussions, that there's a significant opportunity ahead of us. And with that, I'm open for any questions.
Questions? I don't see any lights, but Vice President.
Yeah, thank you, President Scott. Thank you, General Manager McElhaney. Outstanding. You've really used this water analysis methodology well, and the key is to, these aren't the actions we're going to take. These are, let's hear it from the people on the ground that know it the most. What are the strengths, weaknesses? What are the opportunities, all the potential opportunities? What's every rock we could considerably even look at to turn over, right? And likewise with the threats. So good input. And for those listening, you know, your preamble was useful, but I just wanted to add to that. You know, nothing in here, especially in the opportunity area. If we hear someone say, the general manager is proposing that, that would be a misinterpretation of what has been presented here. These are ideas that we can consider, and on behalf of the community, we should consider and figure out if any of them are the right things to do. Well done.
Thank you, Vice President Thomas. And yeah, I want to reiterate that this is staff's opinions on things we should look at. It's definitely not something that the board has advocated for. It's just, like you said, you know, can we turn over every single rock and see, is there anything there that potentially could help us move the district forward?
I would like to make sure that the staff know how much we appreciate the hard work that they did, and also in your leadership with that, because this is information that we've never had before to go forward with a strategic plan revision.
Thank you, President Scott. And I want to reiterate how appreciative some of our union staff was to be a part of it. So I had multiple staff come up and say, thanks. You know, thanks for just letting us talk and being heard. Mm-hmm. And I told them it was from the board. The board wanted to hear this. And so they feel a little more connected to you. And perhaps, you know, staff, especially at the union level, they don't get to interact with you as much. And so having that come from you and then being able to sit in an open forum and kind of let it rip, so to speak, they really appreciated that. And there was multiple comments about how they were really appreciative that they got to hear have their voice be heard.
Yes, Director Farmer. Oh,
your light? Yes.
Yes. Yes. Director.
I concur with everything President Scott said. Sorry. And I really appreciate the staff and you, and I appreciate having everyone come forward and give us this information. These are things we really need to hear, and we will take them under advisement and see what we can do. And I think continuing to get this type of information would be very helpful.
Absolutely.
Yes, Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Scott. while you're doing this presentation, Mr. McElhaney, it reminds me of a comment that was made to me by Director Dean. I believe she was President Dean at the time, or Vice President Dean. And she said, well, we just had people apply for the position of fire chief. And, there's this fellow that we didn't hire, but he'd make a great general manager. And I'm watching you make this presentation, and it reminds me of what they said at that time. I really appreciate the thoroughness of this report, which I think inspires and encourages us to not necessarily step up to the plate, because I think we're doing the best job we possibly can, but to step up to the plate and be as thorough as possible in addressing what you've stated here. And so thank you so much.
Thank you, Director Farmer. I would say I'm jealous that I didn't get the fire chief position, but you guys found a pretty good fire chief.
And please let everyone know who participated in this SWOT analysis, that we really appreciate their input, their honesty, and we care about what they have to say.
I will. I'll send out an email to staff tonight.
Yes, Director Gray.
Yeah. Thank you, President Scott. I wanted to reiterate what Director Dean just said. I really appreciate it. Obviously, Mr. McElhaney did it. This is a great thing. We should do it, you know, periodically. It's never been done before, I don't think, here. But I really want to show my appreciation to the staff for the quality of their input. These are very perceptive and, serious points they raised. It wasn't just, people complaining about stuff. It was these guys. These are people who really knew what they're talking about, and these are very important things. And we'll get to this later on in this item. President Scott and I, wanted to do this in the context of the strategic plan process, and so the public needs to understand this is input for that process. This is going to culminate in March. So I think it's got got off to a great start. I think we got exactly what we wanted to get, which was just opinions and wide-ranging and honest, candid. So
yeah, thank you.
And my compliments to the staff.
Yeah, thank you, Director Ray. I'll admit, I think I even underestimated my own staff. You know? So when these topics came up and these, I was like, wow, you know, they are not just pawns in the district operations. They are very well-versed and they're very intelligent. And I think with your permission and future strategic planning, they definitely should be tapped for something like this again.
Yes.
One more thing. One of the comments were made that sometimes we make things difficult because we blur the lines between staff and the board and get involved in operational. So you know that those of us who chair standing committees or whatever in our position of the board are very passionate about our role. And if anyone feels that we're blurring the line and complicating things for them, I would hope that they would let you know and that you would pass that word on. Because like I said, we're very passionate about what we do, and we may not realize that we're complicating things for them.
No, absolutely.
So personally, I would like to know if I'm complicating things for anybody, and I think the rest of us would too. Because what we're doing here is not intended to make staff's job harder. We want to support staff, but we don't want to interfere with what they're doing.
No, we appreciate that. And again, I think it could be a mixture of multiple boards, you know, over the past decade. You know, there's been staff here that's been here a long time. So sometimes that all gets compiled together, you know, years of practice. But I think a lot of the staff feel comfortable enough to bring that forward to you if that was the case.
Director Gray?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Any other? Hey, do we have any public comment?
No.
Okay. Thank you. And I think another part of this agenda item is to appoint an ad hoc and ad hoc committee. And Director Gray and I have been working on this as president and vice president. But I think at this point, let's go ahead and we'll have that as part of the motion. So do I have a motion?
So are we making a motion on the presentation or just in appointing an ad hoc committee?
Just appointing an ad hoc.
Well, I think since you,
yeah.
President Scott, and former President Gray have been working together with the general manager and staff on this, I think continuing on as the ad hoc committee would be appropriate.
Everybody okay with that? Do we need a motion?
That was a motion, I think.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Yes. I second that.
Okay, let's go ahead and vote here.
Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Gray?
Aye.
Vice President Thomas?
Aye.
President Scott?
Aye. Okay. Good work. Good work. All right, let's go then to... Agenda section 9, board member committee and liaison reports. And I think I'm just going to open it up to, number one, any discussion or comments or questions that the board members have at this point for any of these reports. Yes, Director Dean.
So it says here, that in the PROS committee meeting, Ms. Amadei brought up concerns regarding consideration by staff of the East Ranch Community Park as a potential alternative skate park location. Do you want to comment on that, General Manager?
I do. We're talking about some of the confusion with the topic of the East Ranch.
Yeah,
and this is on 9C.
On 9C, yeah, it's in the agenda committee report. Yeah.
Page 131.
Yeah, that was a curious conversation.
Yeah, since I authored the report, do you want me to initiate that? Or do you want to solely hear from the general manager?
Up to you. Both. I would like to hear from both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would you like the floor first, Director?
Well, sure. And a couple of members of the PROS committee were very concerned that as they seemed to feel that staff had decided to, prefer the East Ranch as the location, and from everything I heard, nothing could be further from the truth. But you know how rumors get out and impressions get made. But what I heard at the meeting is that, given concern over potential cost escalation, and that the price may the ultimate cost may exceed the funds available, that staff was looking at all of the possibilities and reconsidering all of the possible alternatives available. That was my perception, and that at no point had there been a change in the plans.
And I thank you, Vice President Thomas. I can provide some clarity to that. So it's kind of already getting out there. So we did a couple engineering estimates for the skate park that have come in ranging from $1.2 million to upwards of $1.6 million for the cost to construct the skate park. The grant matches up to $600,000 of the potential $600,000 that Skate Cambria Community Council has raised, for a total of $1.2. So we have already spent a significant amount of preliminary monies in archaeological, design, permitting. I mean, we could go on and on. There's a list. So we're probably down to around $900,000 is what we have left to go towards construction. So if we have engineering estimates coming in at $1.2 to $1.6, we're underfunded. Now, the CCSD has done its part in terms of we've secured the grant. We should be funded by January. The CCSD has already dedicated $178,000, which some of that has been spent in preliminary costs. And we've also encumbered $760,000 of general fund reserves that will be spent if this was to start, and we wait for reimbursement for that money to come back into the general fund. So we've locked up some of our general funds. So the CCSD has done their part. Unfortunately, because of inflation, it would appear that inflation has outpaced or the initial thoughts of what this skate park would cost. So as we were looking at potential resolutions to how do we move this project forward, we've worked with the ad hoc committee to think about creative options to close that funding gap. One of those options is in-kind donations, getting local contractors to provide materials, labors, goods, services, to close some of that gap, because that can be applied towards our matching piece to get to the $1.2 million. The discussion of the East Ranch was, okay, if we were to have the East Ranch as an option to build the skate park, it would be significantly less expensive, because a lot of the money that is being spent on the skate park is because of the ancillary features that have to be put in because of county requirements. The skate park features themselves, when you talk about the ramp and things of that nature, that budget for the skate park features by themselves is only around $350,000. The rest of those monies is all of the other things: parking lot, retaining wall, curb and gutter, drainage basin, landscaping, bathroom.
Yeah.
So when we talk about the East Ranch, there's already a restroom there, so that's a significant savings. The complications from that are is that we would probably have to give up the current grant that we basically have in pocket. So the discussions that were being had at the ad hoc level and even at the PROS level was, it is an alternative if we can't move this forward in the original plan. That was it. It's not a staff wants it at the East Ranch. If anything, a staff wants to complete this project as stated, because we've worked so hard on it. Mr. Green and Mr. Reaper and Mr. Johnson and myself and Mrs. Dodson have spent countless hours working through the red tape and bureaucracy of this grant to get it funded. So the last thing we want to do is to abandon that grant and then start all over again at the East Ranch. However, if it was a choice between we've failed to secure the funding for the current location, is there an alternative to where this still could happen? And there was a lot of pushback from that from Skate Cambria. They're really not interested in seeing it on the ranch. And there was some emotions that got involved as far as that goes. But it was just merely an exercise of thought. If it doesn't happen at this current location because of funding issues, is there a way it can still happen on the East Ranch? And that was really it. I was not pushing for the East Ranch. I was just presenting options, much like the SWOT analysis. Here are things we could do or take a look at. And that's the same thing for the skate park. So unfortunately, or fortunately, we're looking at a couple mock bids from actual general contractors that would be interested in this project that will give us an idea of what they would bid this project for, which will isolate how short we are. And I know Skate Cambria and the community council is working diligently on closing that funding gap. If the grant is awarded, we have a 3 to 5 year window to complete the project. So it does buy us a little bit of time to close that gap. However, the longer you go, the more prices go up, so that you're kind of chasing the dollars, so to speak. But that hopefully that provides some clarification on the discussion of the East Ranch.
Yes, Director Gray.
I guess I'm tempted to ask a question. I'm just if I confirm on the grant. It really is specific to the project in that location, right? There's no way that it can be repurposed or renegotiated.
Not this current grant cycle. If we were to change locations, we would be starting from scratch. So what we would do is we would reject this current grant. However, they are opening up an identical grant cycle that's identical to the one that we were awarded. We would have a great chance at qualifying again. But we go back into a competitive mode with everybody else that applies. These grants are specific to parks, so there's an opportunity that we're going to be looking at, regardless of the outcome of this current location, or perhaps the community park is a great project for the next grant cycle, because that's what these funds are really made for. It's not just a skate park, but it's building parks in general. And so building a park from scratch in the East Ranch it's the prototype for this type of a grant. So we've actually been suggested by the granting agency to apply again for the community park. But if we were to really consider not building it in this location and moving it to the ranch, we'd have to withdraw from this current grant and reapply.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? No? Any other questions or statements about the other reports? Is there any public comment on any of these reports?
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you all for your hard work. And these reports are really excellent. They really help me understand what's going on out there. Okay. Let's go to future agenda items. Yes.
Thank
Vice you. Vice President Thomas.
Thank you. President Scott. And so if you value data, and you all know that I do, if one were to put in a spreadsheet the duration and the number of pages of our agenda packets for the current year, we would be way over 4,000 pages that that each of the directors has consumed over the course of the year. And in the range in a given month has been, as high as 600 or 700 pages. And well, we're gaining efficiency. Any fantasy that we'll face less problems in the future and therefore less volume are probably fantasies. So the receiving the board agenda packet typically Friday close of business. So that's the weekend, and it's one heck of a scramble to get through the current packages for 2 weeks. And now, in some cases, we may double that. So I think we need additional time. My experience in bringing peer reviews, project reviews, where we have hundreds of pages of documents for review, and bringing technical professionals, we always set a 2 week minimum. I wouldn't expect that, but have only 3 business days to prepare is unreasonable as well. So I would like to see confirmation that we'll receive the board agenda packets at least, say, Tuesday the week prior. So we've got a few days of lead time of we have a week to prepare, because there are times when the entire calendar the week prior isn't entirely clear. We sometimes have our own weed abatement issues. We sometimes have our own plumbing issues in our own homes. And so, yeah, and we have our own families. So that's my ask. And I would like confirmation that we'll have sufficient time. So I'd like a little better discussion on that. And I bring that up in terms of next month, our agenda. So future agendas, can we get them sooner?
May I?
Yes, please.
That might need to be an actual agenda item.
It needs to be, yes. Yeah.
Because there is some complications with getting it out that early, yeah. According to Ms. Dodson, and she's got a handy-dandy calendar over here, and she's already making notes.
As you recall, when we were discussing accepting the move to one meeting per month and this timing, I made this expectation very verbal.
I agree. I just believe that to be a board directive that we would have to hear as staff and have some dialogue.
Yeah, I think we need to do that, but you need to do the research.
Yeah, there's definitely complications with posting by the Tuesday prior for 5 months out of next year, and that would be we wouldn't be able to have the expenditure report done because the month end is basically closing when we're posting. The fire chief would not have his stats. Most likely the sheriff's department wouldn't have their stats to me in time. Well levels also, go by the month too. So there would be some complications at least 5 months out of the 12.
And that was, as I voted on that, affirmative on that item, I had made that a condition of my affirmative vote. And I was surprised, frankly, when I saw the second Thursday, because I thought that would be quite a challenge. I wouldn't mind if this won't work, to force the agenda packets out and basically ensure to the public we're saying that, well, we are not really going to give adequate pre-reading time to the directors or to the public. I think that would be inappropriate.
What I'd like to do is just, let's stop the discussion. We'll talk more. And what is really going to be fun for you is starting. When is our next agenda review meeting?
I believe it's next Thursday.
Okay. Well, there you go, and you're there. So we'll talk about it at that point. Number one, we have to decide when that might be, and number two. I don't think we need to right now decide whether it's going to be something that we can do. So we'll go ahead and put it on the agenda for the agenda. Does that sound good? You're going to have fun. Okay. Any other future agenda items? Armor? Nope. Yes, Director Gray.
I just wondered, do we want to have Ms. Dodson list the current future agenda items that are already there?
Would you like to do that for January?
Sure.
Okay.
So the proposed January board meeting items are swearing in of the new fire captain and reserve firefighter, consideration of adoption of a resolution ratifying the MOU between CCSD and SEIU Local 620, and adoption of a resolution amending the salary schedule. Consideration of adoption of a resolution ratifying the MOU between CCSD and IFF Local 4635 and adoption of a resolution amending the salary schedule. Consideration of adoption of a resolution approving the updated management and confidential employees group payment and compensation plan. Consideration of adoption of a resolution approving the updated district personnel policies, procedures, and rules. Consideration of adoption of the procurement policies and procedures policy 2135, and that comes back with the suggestion of updating the 2025 section 5.3C or whatever it was that we discussed at the last board meeting. Consideration to approve the capital improvement project CIP list format. Consideration to update the grants policy number 2170. Consideration to direct staff and district council to review the board and standing committee bylaws, which is our annual review. Discussion and consideration to fill vacant seats on the standing committees. Review of the ad hoc committee assignments and status. Discussion and consideration of the standing committee chair and liaison appointments. Discussion regarding the title and focus of the new standing committee. discussion and consideration regarding the district's strategic plan workshop, discussion and consideration of approval of a public works contract with the vendor for the installation of the water meter register replacement and advanced metering infrastructure upgrade, and authorization for the general manager to execute the agreement, discussion and consideration regarding the Mission Country Disposal Franchise Agreement, discussion and consideration to approve the CCSD outdoor lighting policy number 2230, and receive a presentation from Kevin Merck Associates regarding the Cambria Water Reclamation Facility Adaptive Management Plan quarterly baseline monitoring reports.
Mm-hmm. And I think the February agenda is lighter.
Yes.
So I do have a question. So when do the staff reports need to be ready, or any of our reports need to be ready for January 9th?
They need to be to me by January 1st at 5 p.m.
Are you working on the 1st of January?
I work every single day.
Okay. Okay. 1/1/25.
And that is your board member committee and liaison reports deadline. The staff report deadline is actually Christmas Day.
Yeah. Yeah.
When is the next agenda review
scheduled? Next week.
Yeah. Next Thursday.
I just, from my experience, I would, that sounds like a pretty scary list for one meeting. But there may be a couple items there that you can continue to February.
We can look at that.
And a lot of these are on the consent agenda.
Oh, yeah. Consent agenda, too.
Yeah.
A lot of them, yeah.
Yeah. Any other questions about that? No. Any other comments from the board? Any public comment? Ooh, yes. Sir, Mr. Dudzik.
I couldn't help myself. I had to get up here just for a second, but thank you, Mr. McElhaney. It was absolutely amazing presentation. I agree with the board. It's fantastic. You mentioned the grants policy documents you're going to be looking at coming up soon. I would strongly recommend that you move that up in the agenda, get it up as soon as you can. Because in light of Prop 4 funding, we're talking about tens of millions of dollars for CCSD in grant funding. So helping the staff make sure they can quickly move forward and you can make quick decisions on grants and the grant activities, I think is going to be real important. I just strongly recommend that you move the grant discussions up, make sure the policies are clear, and that we're doing everything we can to ensure that those funding opportunities come to the district in those priority areas where the district needs that funding.
Thank you. Hey, so are we ready to adjourn?
Just one more comment.
Yes.
I wanted to congratulate our new president on efficient management of a pretty substantial agenda.
Thank you.
Good job. Thanks. It's good to have you there.
Thank you. Good to be here. Hey, it's adjourned.